Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Thanks for listening to this St. Louis on the Air podcast, brought to you by Lindenwood University. Real experience, real success.
Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Sarah Fenske. How does our position in an organization's hierarchy affect our perception of racism? A new study published in the American Sociological Review aims to tackle just that question. Authors Adia Harvey Wingfield and Koji Chavez talked to 60 black workers in the healthcare industry. All of them perceived racism, but there were stark differences in what was perceived by physicians, nurses, and technicians. And here to discuss it today is the study's co-author. That's Adia Harvey Wingfield. She's a professor of sociology at Washington University in St. Louis, and she's also associate dean for faculty development. So, Adia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So you found big differences in the racism reported by physicians versus nurses and then versus technicians. What, for example, did physicians report seeing?
So physicians were a lot more likely to talk less about individual interactions that they had that were a challenge and more likely to put their challenges in the context of bigger structural problems. So they would talk, for example, about issues with access to education or issues finding mentors or even issues getting into hiring. And those would be the areas where, for them, the biggest challenges were present when it came to race in the workplace.
And how does that compare with, say, nurses?
Very differently. So nurses did not usually nurses would talk some about individual experiences that they had, but they were more likely to consider those to be a bigger part of their experiences with workplace discrimination. They would acknowledge that hiring was an issue for nurses and that there were educational problems as well, but they were a lot more likely to talk about challenges with supervisors and to situate these as examples of individual discrimination that were a lot more prevalent.
So something that felt personal to them.
Very much so.
Okay.
Yes.
How about then technicians? And for those who aren't in the medical industry, a technician would kind of be the lowest man on this particular totem pole.
Yes, exactly. One of the things that I learned pretty quickly in my research was that healthcare is very hierarchical, and there are really clear divisions between doctors, nurses, and technicians. And technicians were even less likely than nurses to note a lot of the more structural barriers. They didn't talk as much about structural patterns present in hiring that made it harder for black technicians across the board, but they would talk a lot about individual difficulties that they had with supervisors, sometimes with patients. So for them, their experiences were even more individualized than, say, nurses, and certainly more so than most doctors.
Okay. Now, in terms of these doctors, I thought it was interesting. They did report a few incidents that they seemed to sort of paint as being somewhat rare. And these seem to involve not so much colleagues as maybe some older white patients. Mm-hmm. What are some things that they described there?
Right. So in my book on the topic, I refer to this as the that one time experience, where doctors would say, well, there was that one time when something happened and this patient came in and they told me that they weren't going to allow me to treat them. But that was one time and it wasn't consistent with how I typically experience work. So in that vein of the one-time experience, that was something that was common for some doctors in my, not common, but that was something that did occur for some doctors in my study, that they would experience a time when patients would say, I just don't feel comfortable with you treating me. I'll just wait for someone else to be my doctor. That was more common among emergency medicine physicians than it was among many other types of doctors in the study. But that would be an example of the type of individual experience that doctors observe.
And in terms of the emergency medicine doctors, any sense you want to hazard a guess of why they might be seeing this more than other colleagues?
Yeah, I do. I have a theory about that. I think that when people see a physician, particularly if you're a person who's fortunate enough to have private insurance. In many cases, the way that medicine is set up now, we actually can pre-select our doctors in advance. You can go online, you see who's in your network, and you pick someone that you feel comfortable seeing. So I think for many Black doctors, that new model of medicine actually allows them to kind of absent themselves from some of the experiences of racial harassment that ER doctors experience. Whereas we all know, if you're going to see an emergency medicine doctor, it's an emergency.
It's random.
So you're already not kind of in your best place all right from the beginning. But you also have much less control over who your physician will be. So you go to the ER, you see who's there. And I think for many emergency medicine doctors, the combination of those circumstances put them in environments where they experienced a lot more of those individual challenges than many other doctors did.
That's interesting. I mean, as you point out, so many of us are choosing our physician mm-hmm. by going to maybe a website
right.
and we get their bio. And in many cases, we're even getting a photo.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
I imagine this was probably much different 10 years ago
right.
When websites weren't quite as ubiquitous, maybe 20 years ago.
Sure.
I'm dating myself here. But now, I'm wondering, you mentioned in your paper that prior research involving physicians had described routine, constant encounters with casual racism.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get the sense maybe this is something that's changing over time? Is more people are selecting, if they're a racist, they're selecting a doctor who looks like them? Or what do you think accounts for the difference between what was reported to you versus these other studies that you mentioned?
Right. And some of those studies are my own work. I'd done some previous work on Black men in various occupations and professions and found that they were more likely to talk about these types of incidents. I don't know if I'm quite that optimistic that I feel that we're at the beginning of a sea change for what these doctors might be experiencing. But I do think, again, that specialty area makes a big difference. And mm-hmm. I think that some of the issue has to do with how we tend to do research on these areas. I think that many researchers go in asking respondents questions about what types of things they might experience and framing it in line with these ideas about microaggressions that we're more likely to talk about today. But I think one of the things that comes out of my study that I want people to think about is that when we're thinking about the experience of discrimination, it may not always be this overt experience of microaggressions or things that are very commonplace or obvious to people. It might be more so the experience of being underrepresented in school systems, the experience of having a difficult time finding a mentor. Those aren't necessarily microaggressions, but they're still having an impact on how Black professionals are perceiving their workplaces.
Talk to me a little bit about what these physicians saw. They had some very specific things mm-hmm. that they were citing. I don't know if you're comfortable maybe reading a few
sure.
from what they told you, but I did find some of their observations interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a quote that I really like from the paper from Caroline, who's identified in the paper. She's a doctor, and she talked about the ways that she felt race mattered for Black physicians getting hired. And she said, by way of example, I was thinking to myself, when we were going through all of the fellowship applicants, why are we giving this girl a spot? I mean, nobody reviewed her application, really. I don't remember what her step scores were. These are licensing scores. I said, why are we giving this girl a spot? I didn't know what she looked like. I'd never worked with her before, but it was almost a given that she was to come here. And I said, we only have 3 spots. We've got 100 applicants. Why her? And they said, well, she's the chief resident. She trained here. She needs a spot. The same was with another white guy who was given a spot. His dad was one of the professors in the radiology department, but he had a horrible personality. I said, this dude has no personality, y'all. Unless he's Albert Einstein, he's got the newest cancer drug. Let's move on. And they said, no, he's got one of our 3 spots. I said, let's review here. We're giving 2 spots to people without reviewing their applications. So really, everybody else is competing for 1 spot. And they said, yep.
That's interesting. So yeah. They're picking up on kind of these informal networks mm-hmm. or these connections that they see as helping white colleagues in a way they themselves did not have help.
Exactly. And I think this issue of informal networks that you've raised is really key here. Because, again, these aren't things that come up if our research questions and our study designs ask people to talk about more overt things that happen to you in the workplace. If you're thinking along the lines of, when is the last time someone was overtly rude to me, or when is the last time that someone told me that I couldn't treat them, these types of issues aren't going to raise. But again, these are really important issues that matter for how Black professionals have access into certain types of jobs, because they are so grounded in the connections and the relationships that we have, from which many Black professionals aren't fully included.
I thought it was interesting. The nurses talked a bit about historically Black colleges mm-hmm. and universities and how
how they felt that they were perceived. I know mm-hmm. many of those universities have excellent nursing programs. Mm-hmm. What did they tell you about that?
Yeah, so it might take me a minute to come up to find that particular quote, but nurses also talked about how there could be challenges in getting hired because of the emphasis on credentialing, and that perceptions of historically Black colleges as being not as strong or not as educationally rigorous could potentially work to the disadvantage of some Black nurses who are coming out of those places. The irony here, though, I think, is that for many years, research and data have shown that graduates of HBCUs, historically Black colleges and universities, are actually more likely to earn doctorate degrees, to go to law school, to go to medical school. So these are environments that are actually doing an exemplary job training our generations of Black professionals, but because of perceptions that they don't necessarily offer the high levels of skill and training, those perceptions could potentially be working against the people who are coming out of those institutions.
Hmm. We're talking to Adia Harvey-Wingfield. She's a professor of sociology at Washington University. She has a really fascinating new study out that's in it's published in the American Sociological Review. Let's talk a little bit about these technicians, mm-hmm. because I felt like they were kind of on the front lines,
yeah.
and people didn't necessarily treat them with the respect mm-hmm. that they treat physicians. They seem to have some encounters with patients that just seemed pretty troubling.
Right. Yes, that's definitely true. And this is another example of the way in which healthcare is very hierarchical and how that can shape the experiences that people have in it. Technicians are certainly on the front line. They're often the first to greet patients and to interact with them, which I think has an impact on the types of treatment they receive, particularly relative to doctors who now actually spend less time with patients. So I have a quote from a respondent I identify in the paper as Darren, who is a technician. And he told me, when I walk into a room, I get these looks that I can read. Who is he? What is he here for? And the looks are incredible. The white people look at their family members and give them a side-eye look out of the corner of their eye, and they're a little surprised. The face tells many stories. It's a shocked look on them. Hmm. So this is an example, again, of seeing people kind of seeming surprised and perhaps uncertain that the technician who's there to provide care is someone who's Black, which may not be what they've expected.
And the technician, this is not someone like a physician where people are going and selecting one on
right.
a website. That's a random assignment
exactly.
there.
Exactly, which I think, again, helps to explain why their experiences and their perceptions of this individual discrimination are a lot more frequent than what doctors describe. You, to my knowledge, can't select your technician for the most part.
Now, this is overall a very serious subject, but I will say there was one part of your study that did make me laugh out loud, and that was the technician's perceptions of the doctors.
Yes.
In some cases, it sounded like they had had some interactions that weren't pleasant with doctors, but they did not chalk that up to racism. Tell me what they thought about these doctors that were rude.
Yes, I will. This is a funny part in the study as well. Technicians did not really see doctors as being a source of racial tension as much so as they did patients. And a quote from Sonia really spells this out. Sonia said to me, "Doctors are just rude to everybody. Honestly, I can't tell you of a situation where a physician was unduly rude or nasty to me because of my color. They are just rude people, period." So, sorry to physicians who happen to be listening.
Yes, I hope if anyone's listening that either they will understand this isn't about them or that it will help them correct
right.
their behavior.
Exactly.
The technicians are paying attention to,
exactly.
to how you're treating them. So, bigger picture, I'm very interested in this research that you did, because not only did you do these surveys and you and your colleagues talked to 60 different people, but you also did field research mm-hmm. where you were out there observing these workplaces firsthand. Mm-hmm. Why was that important for this study?
I really wanted to get a sense of the day-to-day experiences that healthcare workers had in the field. Interviews are really useful because they allow people to go into depth about what their experiences are and what they see and what seems most pertinent to them. But if you're actually there with them at work, you get a whole different firsthand view that sometimes will corroborate or sometimes will challenge or in most cases just shed more light and elaborate further on the things that they're dealing with at work and what they're seeing firsthand. It really gave me a unique window into that.
Can you give me an example of how maybe something you witnessed when you're out there doing this field work ended up influencing how you understood the surveys or the bigger problems that you're looking at?
Sure. So one of my favorite examples from my field work corroborated points that doctors made to me about their everyday lack of experience with racial harassment and bias. And this came as I was working a night shift, actually, with one of the doctors in an emergency medicine department. And I was filling out some notes at the front desk during a lull, and an emergency medicine technician who was white came over to me and said, we have to get to exam room 6. We've got to deal with this patient. We've got to get her mask off. And I looked up and I realized he thought I was an actual doctor. So I kind of demurred and I said, you should probably talk to someone else. And he said, no, it's got to be you. We've got to act fast. This has to happen. And I was kind of stunned because I have no business practicing medicine of any kind.
You can't let that peer pressure get to you. You don't want to go treat that patient.
Exactly. So I said, no, I really think you want to talk to Sonia, who was a few rows down from me. And so finally she saw what was happening and she came over and she said, I'll take care of it. She's not actually a medical doctor. And he still was confused. And he looked at me and he said, how can that be? You have on the white coat. And I thought that was so interesting because it really lent a lot of credence to what doctors were telling me about how they could actually be in these work environments as place as people who fit in to a large degree. It wasn't a case of the type of misperception and doubt that we see in a lot of the research about Black professionals, that even in my case, as someone as an outsider, simply wearing the white coat was all it took to be perceived as a doctor to the point where I was, as you put it, receiving pressure to complete medical treatment that I'm not qualified in any way to give. But it really underscored what the doctors were telling me about how their issues aren't so much those things of dealing with those types of challenges. It's more the lack of mentorship. It's more the challenges present in the educational system. It's more the biases that are present in hiring that really create the difficulties for them.
So in general, do you think a higher professional status, like say being a physician, can insulate a person of color from discriminatory practices and these kind of incidents?
So I think it depends on what those discriminatory practices are, right? And I think some of it does have to do with specialty area because, as I mentioned, emergency medicine doctors had a bit of a
different
experience,
yeah.
Right? But I do think that status does matter because it does shape the types of interactions that we have with people in the workplace, and it does shape how those interactions are structured. So I don't know that I would go so far as to say that, and certainly it's not supported by the data, that Black workers who achieve a certain level of status are somehow then completely, if you'll forgive the pun, inoculated from these types of racial issues. But I do think that it has an impact on how they're experienced and which types of things seem most significant to them.
So I know this issue of healthcare is one that's just a particular focus for you. You mm-hmm. have a book on this. It's called Flatlining: Healthcare Work, Race, and Inequality in the New Economy. What attracted you to the idea of healthcare through this lens?
Yeah, so I really was interested in starting that project in thinking about how changes to how we work were having an impact on Black professionals, right? And we know that there have been a lot of shifts to work over the past maybe 30 or 40 years. Work used to be this thing that people could count on being pretty stable. People would work for one company for the duration of a career. There was a pretty robust public sector that offered subsidized education and access to training. Of course, there was a lot of racial segregation during this time period also, which meant that work wasn't available to everyone. But we're now in a period of time where work is a lot more insecure for many people. And the pathways into professional work have become a lot less stable and a lot less secure. We see that by way of example with the enormous amounts of student loan debt that people are taking on now to get qualified for jobs that are becoming more uncertain. But simultaneously, many organizations and workplaces talk more about wanting more racial diversity. And I was really curious about how Black professionals were navigating what I saw as a bit of a tension there, where companies say that they want more diversity at the same time that professional jobs are shrinking and becoming less stable. And healthcare, to me, was a perfect example of all of those things. It's an industry where certainly it's subject to a lot of these shifts, where professions like medicine and nursing do talk more about wanting more racial diversity. And it just seemed like a really amazing site that I could sink my teeth into, so to speak, and talk with people about how they were dealing with those transitions.
And you have noted the lack of representation more broadly within that healthcare industry. I'm wondering, where is the industry now on that front?
Maybe this is an area where I am somewhat optimistic. I do think that healthcare as a profession is more aware of some of the challenges that they face. And I do think that they're genuinely serious about wanting to solve these issues related to racial diversity. You can look at statements put out by the American Medical Association, the American College of Nursing, and they do seem to get it to the degree that they realize that given the data that show that practitioner-patient racial matching can really matter in outcomes, this is a big problem if your practitioner base continues to be so dissimilar from the changing demographics of our American population, right? In short, if you want to continue to practice medicine and do so effectively, knowing that it matters to have people practicing who look like the patients, there's a long way to go in terms of closing that gap. And I do think that many medical professionals and industries are aware of that. I think that they are making steps to try to address these issues. And my hope is that my research can shed some light on other solutions and other ideas that it might be useful to keep in mind as they go about this path of trying to make these changes happen.
Well, Adia Harvey Wingfield, a sociology professor at Washington University, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, February 7th, 2020. So I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast on neutralizing workplace racism. The audio segment that we just heard, St. Louis Public Radio, Adia Harvey Wingfield, black female. She is extraordinarily beautiful. Wow. I was stunned. I was flipping. I saw that this was supposed to, her interview was supposed to happen like a day or two beforehand, and I didn't see a picture of her. I just saw what they were going to be talking about. I was like, oh, workplace racism. Let's see, you know, if they have anything constructive to say. So it airs. I check it out. I know, okay, we'll check this out for the broadcast this coming Friday, make my notes and things. I'm going to get, you know, together for the program today. And I go back to see the book title. So I'm like, oh, yeah, she's written this book and a couple other books about racism in the workplace. And I finally get to see it. Whoa. Amazing. Like, made me pause for a second. Like, my goodness. And I thought that was important. I think sometimes we can kind of forget there is a human, anything that reminds you, oh, yes, this is a human being. This is a mother. This is someone's daughter. Someone's wife, potentially, you know. Oh, whatever it is. Oh, she's really attractive. Whatever that will remind you, this is a human being, not just someone who wrote this book that I like or don't like. But she is spectacular. Wow. Anyway, so the book that she wrote, Flatlining, Race, Work, and Healthcare in the New Economy, just came out. Might see if we can get her to be a guest on the program. I took lots of notes while listening to her segment. The thing that she said at the end, when they were closing the segment, she said that the healthcare industry is aware that we have what they call it, changing demographics, and that you don't have a lot of so-called diversity amongst the physicians, doctors, and they are aware of this, and now they're, you know, supposedly making efforts to change this. The former aspect of what she said, they are aware. She didn't say they're ignorant about the fact that we don't have very many black doctors and a history of racism. She said segregation, a few other terms that minimize, but they're not ignorant about the fact that they don't hire too many Negro doctors. And in fact, remember we had the segment, there's many, black skin, white coat, Mr. Tweedy, Dr. Tweedy, wrote about, I have that book here. It's on my shelf. It might be behind me. I might have to actually stand up so I can move away from the bookshelf a little bit and inspect. But I have that book, Black Skin, White Doctor. And then I was thinking of the black doctor in North Carolina, down there with Mr. Reed. He did a segment on NPR in 2013. 55 miles per hour means you, black boy. And they had him on to explain, and he said that he feels like he has to go very, very slow, take his time, not go too fast. He has an Ivy League degree. He's a doctor. Might get in trouble with white people. I remember this so starkly because I called to see if we could get him to be a guest on the program. He was in NPR. He was on NPR to talk about this. And he said that as a doctor, he'll get white patients and he'll be trying to explain, you know, what they need to do, take this medication or do this, you know, get more rest, whatever it is. And he says that they'll tell him, you know, you're being uppity. And he said they'll use that word exactly. You're being uppity. Who are you talking to me like I'm ignorant? Got some nigger doctor. So he goes on NPR to discuss all of this. I contacted him about being a guest on the program, and the hospital was going to fire him. He was terminated, in fact, when I spoke to him. He, you know, was looking for other jobs, and, you know, he was supposed to be moving on. And then they rescinded it, and he was allowed to stay. Needless to say, he did not want to do any more interviews talking about racism, white supremacy, and certainly not with Gusty Renegade on the cows. But, woo, I will remember that for a long, long time. It's legendary on NPR. I can post. I played the segment many times before. Anyway, I thought of that in addition to the white people not being ignorant and just the layers of racism, white supremacy within the report. I took so many notes. The person doing the interview for St. Louis Public Radio was Evie Hemphill, E-V-I-E-H-E-M-P-H-I-L-L, Evie Hemphill. Definitely looks like this is someone who would be classified, accepted as white, a white woman. I thought she was especially tacky, which is generally the case, predictably the case, when it's a white man or white woman interviewing a non-white person about racism, white supremacy. The tackiness knows no bounds. So specific digging through the notes. The HBCU disadvantage. I was reminded of the late Dick Gregory. He's talked frequently about I've heard him talk frequently about how graduates of HBCUs do better, earn more money over the course of their career, that white people have statistics on this. I'm not sure if this is accurate or not, but this would seem to contradict what he said, at least in this one presentation, that black workers, healthcare workers, felt as though they were discarded because they graduated from an HBCU, and that that wasn't a sophisticated enough credential on their resume, which is racism, white supremacy, all one can say. And particularly when you contrast that with what was said about, okay, we're going to have three applicants. We're going to accept three. We got 100 applicants, excuse me. We're going to accept three. And so we got this one person that we're going to accept, and we haven't looked at this person's credentials, but we're going to take this person. I don't think they're a good fit. Maybe we should. No. No. Okay. Because they. Okay. 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 All right. So this other fella here, his personality is trash. Like, he really does. Wait a minute. You said we didn't look at his credentials. Wait a minute. We didn't even look. It doesn't matter. Okay. That's okay. Okay. So the first two candidates, presumably white, that's what I mean about being explicit. Nobody said, hey, these two, this white gal and this white woman, white affirmative action, this white gal and this white woman, who both don't seem to have excellent credentials. They don't seem to be the quote unquote cream of the crop, but we're going to take them because they're cool with, you know, whoever, or helped John rape somebody or whatever. They know some dirt on them. That's in the cup. Sorry about that. They have some secret information that they would prefer not be released publicly. So we're going to take these two. And so then, ostensibly, we've got the rest of these 98 applicants are competing for one spot. Yep. Evie Hemphill at that point says, interesting. That's how she classifies. That's interesting. Not, wow, that is the system of white supremacy in operation. Like, my goodness. Again, now contrast that with, oh, we don't take nigger graduates. Where did you go to school at? Howard. Morehouse, Spelman, Norfolk State, Grambling. We don't take niggers from the nigger. Get out of here. Get out of here. We don't take niggers. You got a 2.0. Okay. You went to wherever. Pick the school. Cal Berkeley. Pick an Ivy League. You went to Brown. You've got a 1.6 and a terrible attitude. No. I don't think we're going to take this one anyway. It doesn't. Okay. The system of white supremacy credentials. Let's see what else. the power of the white coat, I thought that was fascinating, even though when she presented that situation, she said that, you know, she was there and Adia Harvey Wingfield, she had on the white coat. And this, I guess, physician or employee there said, hey, you know, you got to come and do this, and assume that she was the doctor. I think that is important within the lens of white supremacy, because they already said they don't have a lot of diversity in the healthcare industry. So generally speaking, the person who is wearing that white coat is also going to be classified as white, woman or man. And the authority that that coat commands, this person just assumes that you're the doctor and that you can do whatever. What happens when the person wearing the white coat already assumes that they have, you know, absolute authority? Like, oh yeah, I am in charge. I know. And in fact, we got some ignorant niggers here. Now, you already heard they got nurses and doctors and healthcare providers who've gone to school and spent thousands of dollars and maybe took out loans and worked jobs in the summertime and maybe worked while they were going to school, so that they could graduate from an HBCU and be proud and come in with their credentials, and they think, oh, you're just some ignorant nigger. Now, if they think that about the people that they work with, imagine what they think about the people that come in for assistance who, you know, probably are not a doctor. Dying while black, Vernelia Randall, medical apartheid, Harriet A. Washington. Let's see. Oh, yeah, remember the HBCU? My cup runneth over this week with regards to workplace racism segments. I had bunches of them that I could have played. I could have went back to back with St. Louis. Like, it was just system of racism, white supremacy. There were lots of reports on white supremacy racism this here week. But remember that. In fact, one of them, I'm going to play it tomorrow. Easily could have played it today. It was right on time. HBCUs. Remember that. HBCUs. And this also would contradict what Mr. Dick Gregory said about HBCU graduates doing better. I never hear good news when it's an HBCU. They did have that report this week about Howard getting a massive donation. I guess that would be one, but that's rare. Anytime I hear talk about an HBCU, it's always something bad in the system of racism, white supremacy. No surprise there. Okay. I think that's it for Miss Wingfield's report. If we have black people, because I'm pretty sure that we do, if we have black people in the healthcare industry, if you have thoughts on the report or your own experiences, that would be great. I did think that was interesting. She was talking about the spectrum in terms of the perception of white supremacy racism. She did use the term microaggression. Ugh, definitely discourage use of that term. But this is terrorism in the workplace, and talking about, for some people, it was, like I said, you know, not, they don't think I'm intelligent, I'm not qualified to be here. For some of them, it was not having a mentorship program, not having support resources there, not seeing other people like you, being hired, a network, just all of this encompassing different levels of the system of racism, white supremacy, all of it being the same thing. That is, you know, the definition of a system. But again, if we have any black non-white healthcare workers who would like to share their experience, their thoughts on what was reported in the segment, feel free. Again, remind folks, this here broadcast is not for spectators. If you have figured out these are things so that you do not get those type of remarks, they do not publicly or privately try to minimize your competence, academic accomplishments, your qualifications for the position that you have. That doesn't happen to you. You are respected, well regarded as an informed, intelligent member of the team. Please share with us how you were able to do that. You don't have problems with mentorships, networking. You don't even have a problem with quote unquote diversity. They have lots of non-white people who work where you do, and they are being well paid for their services. If you have figured that out, even on an individual level, you get your raises when you're supposed to, you get sparkling reviews, every time without fail. They don't mess over your schedule. They don't schedule you to come in at 8 a.m. on a Friday and then switch it up and have you come in at 11 p.m. on a Saturday. That doesn't happen to you. Let us know how you did it. You cannot be a spectator. Please dial in the number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if you have any problems, you can relate to anything that was shared in the report from Ms. Adia Harvey Wingfield, certainly dial in if you would like any counter-racist suggestions, thoughts on what might be happening to you. If there is a problem, we can do our best to try to help you solve problems without creating new problems. If you are not able or not willing to dial in, you can email untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. We can read your commentary on the air and keep things anonymous if you would prefer. With that, I have a question for listeners. Do folks have a code for doing business with other victims of racism? I think non-Clemson grad, retired firefighter, they have shared different instances of working with other individuals, black people, sometimes having problems, sometimes not. Do people have a code? This is my code if there's going to be an entrepreneurial opportunity involving black people exclusively. This will be the code to get through this in the most constructive way possible without conflict. We'll have total what they call transparency, where everybody will have accurate information in a timely manner. And we can move forward with the business arrangement, and hopefully it'll be, you know, financially lucrative for all involved. Do people have a code around that? And then even more specifically, if it's the business of counter-racism, we're going to get involved in a project, non-white people, victims of racism. We're going to get involved in a project, a counter-racist project. Do you have a code for that? Very important. What questions would you ask at the beginning of the venture? What is this project for? It's an important one. How long are we supposed to be engaged in this project? I think that's another one. But I think very important, and I will even pause for a second, the business of counter-racism, I think that can be important as well sometimes to view it in that manner. I know we say the religion of white supremacy, the business of racism, white supremacy, the business of counter-racism. Sometimes it might be, you know, a project. Let's do this. I know Pamela Evans Harris, late, worked with other non-white people, victims of racism, to write 4 books. That is a business project. You sell the books, so that's a business project, right? So we have to organize. We'd have to get together to coordinate, you know, who's going to write this chapter, who's going to write this chapter, how are we going to get this edited, how are we going to get this collated, how are we going to, you know, are we going to have this on Amazon? Would be a lot that you would have to sit down and work this out between everyone. How are we going to schedule the meetings, that sort of thing. That is the business of counter-racism. Could even be said that the yoga retreat, business of counter-racism. May 21 through May 24, Toronto. Get your passport. But do people have a code around that? That, I think, might be something that is important to consider. I'm even thinking myself, questions, you know, that I would ask, questions that should be asked. Why are we doing this? I think that's always an important one. How long exactly is this supposed to add, to last? Time and energy is important, so that should be crucial. How long exactly is this venture supposed to last? What exactly are we supposed to accomplish? Getting, you know, try to be as explicit as possible. I can say before, from doing yoga, this wasn't the business of counter-racism, the business of yoga and working with other non-white people. I would be very explicit about compensation and getting all of that information detailed, explicit in writing beforehand so that there is no confusion about, you know, if we're doing this for free, fine. Long as that's articulated, you know, up front. If you're doing this volunteer basis, fine. Long as it's articulated up front. If you're supposed to be compensated, how much? Get all of that, you know, from the very beginning, explicit, exact, and that might date, time. You can voice record or get all that written out so that there's no ambiguity around that. No ambiguity. I mean, that's no ambiguity. There should be no confusion about what we're doing, why we're doing this, how long is this supposed to last, and then what happens when we get to the conclusion? We all disband, and that's that, which I am an advocate of. I think that's closer to what Mr. Fuller advocates in the open air, that this is not a permanent, you know, whatever it is, band, and we're going to be together, and just we're doing this one thing, whatever it is. This is the timetable for completion. You know, we do this. Everybody has their duties and, you know, we meet, you know, whatever it is on a weekly basis, a monthly basis to, you know, see how we're progressing. Boom, boom, boom. We get everything done. Bam. We accomplish everything as stated originally has been accomplished. And now we, you know, disband. Maybe we get together and do another project like this at another date and time. We'll have to see. But if people have a code about doing business with other non-white people, that would be great. And then specifically, the business of counter-racism. If you are involved in a project with other non-white people, any sort of project, viewing that as this is a business arrangement, the business of counter-racism, do folks have a code about, you know, how they function, how they function in order to maximize the constructive value of that business partnership? If people have a code around that, that would be tremendous. To share, and or if people have successfully executed that code before, that would be awesome. I guess if I'm counting the counter-racist retreat, I guess that, yeah, that might qualify. Not having a lot of ambiguity, I would say, is very important so that you can have be as detailed as possible about everything that is supposed to happen. If you can have as much precision as possible and try to communicate with as much efficiency and precision so that people have very specific expectations, and then you can try your best to meet those expectations in accordance with what has been outlined. But I think a lot of times just things have not been made explicit, and I think with the yoga retreat, because when we were in Virginia, we worked with all black people, Mr. Khalifa and Chef Nadira, all black people, just being explicit about what's going to be provided, what, you know, all the services include, what is the fee, what are the dates and times. Like I said, just trying to be as explicit as possible about things. Yeah, just blank, same thing we talk about pretty frequently, words, trying to be as explicit as possible about words and what's supposed to be accomplished, what's supposed to be provided, what everybody's duties are, and then addressing that as need be. You know, if things are not being done or if things need to be changed, because that certainly happens. You have circumstances where it might have to be totally changed around. So, you know, just making sure that all of that is being communicated in the most precise, courteous manner. Precision, courtesy, and being timely. I think that can be helpful as well. If you can get things done in a manner where people don't have to be rushed, where everybody kind of knows in advance, that can be tremendously helpful. Anyway, if folks have thoughts on that, feel free. I'll share one listener report. Make sure we get through all of these, and then we'll get to the phone lines. All right. Let's see. Okay, first person that wrote in. I'm going to take a sip of water. Hydration is important, and then we will read. This is from a black male. Okay. Hello, Gus. Recently on my job, I noticed a few whites on the job insinuating that I and other black males are angry while doing the most simplistic things. There it is, the angry Negro. For example, myself and another black male were walking towards the direction that the white male was in.
Hi, it's David Green here. That extra car, the one you'd like to get rid of?
Wow, that was frightening. Alrighty. I don't know where that started playing from. I'll try that again. For example, me and another black male were walking towards the direction that the white male was in just by coincidence at the same time. And the white male goes, "I don't want any trouble. Don't jump me." And laughs as if it's a joke. He makes these types of remarks frequently. Another white male, first thing in the morning, before I even got on the clock, asks me a basic question about the job, and I begin to answer in a regular tone and demeanor, and he does, "Please don't get upset. I'm sorry." And laughs again like it's a joke as I'm answering the question he asked, which showed me he didn't really want the answer to the question. He just wanted to be tacky first thing in the morning. In another incident with the first white male, he sees me walking by him and he goes, "Please, I didn't do anything." And he laughs again. Just an observation I've picked up on lately. In another incident, a white coworker tells me about an interaction he had with a black male on his commute to work. We talk about those workplace commutes. He told me he sat down across from a black male reading a book entitled White Rage. That's Carolyn Anderson. Was published 2016. She talks about the historic number of death threats against President Obama, and why white people are so angry, how we ended up with President Trump. Reading is more important than watching television. He says almost immediately as he sat down, he felt the black male looking at him after reading a bit from text and breathing heavy so as to insinuate that the black male is getting angry while reading the text and turning some aggression towards him. He says, thankfully, another black person came and sat down and began talking with him and took the focus off of me. At the conclusion of the story, he says to me, "I have to see what the book is all about that he was reading. Whites pay attention to what we're reading when they see us reading anything. You had better believe it." Carolyn, and I'm sure that's on his Amazon purchase list right now. He probably has Prime, so it's probably, if he's in Seattle, he could have had it shipped to him before he even left work for home. But they are not ignorant about racism, and you see the same pattern even within the two consistently in a system of white terrorism, in a system of global white terrorism. A white woman or white man consistently suggesting, pretending that they are weak, fragile, helpless. Oh, big scary black man, please don't get upset with me. Can I just ask you a question? Can I just partake of your wisdom? Oh my gosh, don't kill me, please, scary black man. Like, you just keep seeing the same thing. The Negro was reading a book. We didn't even allow them to read books. He was reading a book, and he was about to bite and castrate me. I felt it. If another Negro hadn't come down, he would have destroyed me. The same pattern. I think particularly in the workplace, all of that is about generating a response. They keep doing this, and doing this to someone would make them upset. I mean, you're sitting there, hey, Bob, can I ask you a question really quick? Do you know about Generator 5 and when we need to shut it down? Oh, sure, Bill. Let's see. On Generator, oh, my God, don't get upset. Like, what? Do you want to know what to do with the generator, or like, what is going on? Like, doing that repeatedly, I could see how it would be annoying, where you might get to be like, what the hell? What is wrong with you? And then they can go report. Oh my goodness, he cursed and got an attitude. We've been messing around. We do a little horseplay with everybody. Tomfoolery. We do a little tomfoolery with everyone. And he got us. I would not waste 5 seconds, because I think this person noted when the guy did it, suspected race soldier, when he came in, he hadn't even clocked in yet. And he says, oh, can I ask you a question really quick? And then he goes, oh, don't get upset. Don't get angry. He wasn't asking for the information. He just wanted to take a few moments to be tacky and racist. Once I note that, I would be the black physician. 55 miles an hour means you, black boy. Everything would be slow. I'm going to ascertain, now, is this serious? Or are you just messing around? In fact, I might even ask it to stay in the question lane. After this has happened, you know, once or two times, you know, Bob, are you serious? Are you just here? I would probably think of, you know, are you just here? How I would phrase it. It'd probably take me a day or so. I'd want to think about the best way to articulate that. But is this a serious inquiry? Or are you just here to waste time? That might be the way I articulate it. Is this a serious inquiry? Or are you just here to waste time? And I would let them answer. And once I start, if they start going into any nonsense, I would immediately stop and I would just go about my business. And wouldn't be any more discussion. Wouldn't be anything else to talk about. It would just be all business. And it would just be silence. And then, if somebody said something, it would be, hey, I am all about getting work done. People know me here. I am about getting work done. If anybody needs help, let me know. I will do my best to assist. But we're wasting time in the workplace. Like, they're just coming and pretending to have a serious work-related question. And then when I begin answering,
selling it, I mean, it can be such a hassle.
What is going on here?
So why not donate it to support this station here?
They continue with asking, you know, these bonkers, or just asking a question as though they have a serious inquiry, and then they come with these, you know, silly responses. It's wasting time. I'm serious about, you know, coming in and doing my job. I hope everybody else is. I don't want to waste anybody else's time, and I don't want my time to be wasted. Time. I would bring everything back to the time clock. Time is money, as they say. But yeah, I wouldn't even answer. I would answer with a question. Is this a serious inquiry? Or are you here to waste time? And see what they say. But that is the system of white supremacy. And you see the same pattern. Lots of wasting time. White people don't necessarily have to be qualified. They don't have to be efficient. They don't even have to know the job in some instances. They can have a bad personality, be rude. I've seen a whole lot of that. Doesn't matter. They can come on the job and goof off and mess around and practical jokes all day long. I've seen lots of that too. System of racism, white supremacy is very accommodating of racist loafers and slackers and roustabouts. Very accommodating. Go out, get a little racist joke there, and then I go drink some coffee for an hour. Well, wait, I'll have to get my creative juices going and think of my next few nigger jokes for the day, and then we'll get back on it. Get a little coffee and we'll get back to it. If folks have any suggestions for how to deal with this, whites coming and consistently playing these racist pranks and oh my gosh, don't kill us. Oh, don't get me. I'm so sorry. Don't get angry. If you have any suggestions on how you would respond to that, best way to handle it without causing new problems, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you have a code for doing business with other non-white people, that would be great, especially the business of counter-racism. If you have, you know, a code, questions, tips for minimizing conflict in those endeavors, that would be grand. We'll get folks who dialed in and get in the rest of the emails as we proceed.
Hi, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, good evening, Gus. Good evening, callers and listeners. I'm the caller. I'm calling up with, I don't have an answer for the questions that you had, other than just be respectful and not create any conflict. But I'm calling with a follow-up with the police not letting my daughter into the function, and I made a complaint with the police department. So I've been calling. This happened back in December, I think like the 11th to be exact. And so I'd been calling back. I hadn't heard anything, and I didn't know their protocols. So they said I would receive something by mail. So I was going to call last week, but I wanted to wait till I had a little more concrete information. So last week when I called, or maybe like 2 weeks ago, I was told by the internal affairs sergeant that they were aware of my complaint, but that it was an issue of having proof of some type of video proof. And I said, well, you know, it was at the school, and don't they have cameras at the entrance of the school? He said, there's cameras, but there's no audio. And since my situation was a verbal, and because the police, that particular officer was a detective and was working like an off-duty, he was not required to wear a body camera. They don't have body cameras. Detectives don't have body cameras. Nor does the school resource officer who was also present. They don't wear body cameras at the school. So I already kind of prepared myself that they were going to, you know, it wasn't going to go the way I wanted it to go as far as being in his file. But I did learn some key things that I would like to share with you and the listeners if you should have an issue with the police. Of course, always get video proof, but I wasn't expecting it to go like that, so I didn't have my phone to videotape. So they said, I got the letter. I did get the letter earlier this week, and it says that due to a preliminary review of the allegations you made against Detective Katz, the following item, the review includes examination of the following item: body-worn camera footage of Sergeant Blank. So I thought that was weird. So they actually took into account when I went to turn in my documents, a sergeant came out. It wasn't the detective, his sergeant, just a sergeant who was on duty. He came out and we did a really quick, brief, 2-minute conversation, maybe 5 minutes at max. I really didn't even go into big detail because he let me know that he was not his supervisor. So the fact that they actually used that interaction to determine was very interesting, determine the outcome. The next thing was my complaint packet, and then they had the statement from the school resource officer. Well, that's his buddy, so of course, you know how that's what that was going to say. And then a sworn tape statement by an independent witness. So I immediately, and so it says, because of that, there is insufficient evidence to support your allegation. So I'm like, independent witness? What witness? There were random parents, people, you know, people, I don't know, parents, whoever, leaving or whatever. who is this witness? So I immediately called, and they said that they have a witness. I said, well, I'd like a copy of their statement. And he was very, very nice. He said, no problem. He offered to email me the statement. He said, I just have to read through it and redact any personal information, and I can send it to you. So he sends me the statement by the next day, really early. I'm reading the statement, and I'm floored because this gentleman is saying in the statement how he used the word belligerent several times about my daughter, that she was defiant. She was determined to walk into the event. She approached the fence after the officers told her not to, whatever. But what was really interesting was he says, well, I was told, I was there also, and I was also told that my family members couldn't go in due to overcrowding. And then he goes, me being a firefighter, I understood this, the seriousness of that. So I was okay with my family member not being allowed in. And so I'm like, a firefighter happened to just be there, you know? Okay. And then he asked him in the, I have the statement here. I printed it out. He said, did you hear the officer tell her, the mother, me, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree? No. So I'm like, I'm not understanding. So I asked him, I don't understand. Why are you even bringing up, why are you, my issue was not about being allowed in. It was the unprofessional, discourteous treatment that I received from the officer. And this gentleman didn't even see the interaction between me and the officer. Everything he said was about my daughter. And yes, he was rude, but that wasn't my issue. Oh, well, we had to, I said, well, where did you even get this witness? Where, how did you even know to find this person? The school resource officer identified him as a parent at the school. So you asked the officer who was being rude to me to provide a witness? That, I was floored. I was floored. So bottom line was, there was no proof. It was basically his word against my word. And because of no video, no audio, nothing to sustain the situation, it was discounted. Now, another thing I learned that I did not know before, and is that you can request a copy of the officer's disciplinary history, which I called back after I read the statement and I asked for it, and he emailed it within 10 minutes over to me. And this gentleman is a big time jerk. Okay. Now, I know we don't name call, but many, many, excessive force not sustained, negligent of duty, neglect of duty sustained, report of force sustained, fail to write a report sustained, discourteous not sustained, improper actions unfounded, discourteous not sustained, discourteous unfounded. So he's had many discourteous reports. Let's see, this improper actions, improper pursuit, discourteous, unfounded, bias-based profiling, exonerated. And then there was a few others that were closed due to preliminary review. So just to let the callers know, if you do have an issue with an enforcement officer, you can request their disciplinary history. That is public record. And as I said to the sergeant, he's clearly, he has a problem being with discourteous to people. He will do it again, hopefully the next time someone will catch it on video so that it can go definite, you know, he can receive disciplinary behind it. And on that, I'll mute my line.
Wow. Thank you so much for the update. I guess really quick before you exit, is there anything you would do differently? They say hindsight is 2020, knowing what you know now. Anything that you would do differently to try to safeguard yourself and your family?
I think as far as my response, I did it really well. I didn't have my phone with me because, like I said, when my daughter asked me to come out to the gate to let them know that I was holding a seat for her, I left my phone inside thinking I didn't even know I was going to encounter a police officer at that moment. I thought it was going to be a school staff, but I would have had my daughter at least you know, she's young, she's 21, they have their phones, I would have had her start recording. So if you can, the minute you see that the situation, whether you know it's going to go left or not, start recording, because that would have made all the difference. And that's what the one thing I could say I would do differently.
Start recording. Get video evidence. Definitely helps. I can only say I was looking for the audio segment of, I've said for years, a form like Voltron. Because if memory serves, when you were telling us about this incident, your daughter not being allowed entry into the school event, wasn't there like a white woman who got involved, who was like coming by and got it? Did that happen?
Yes, that is exactly it. And I mentioned that to the sergeant, and I could tell he was holding back. He didn't really want to chime in to say yes, no. And I said, but I did ask him that on the phone, and I said, can I ask you a question? Isn't it typical when police officers are engaging with a citizen in a situation that you do not like other people to interfere, chime in, have comments? He said, yes. I said, so then this is, you know, why was I reprimanded or admonished for not receiving this woman's help, quote unquote? And he was like, ma'am, you know, I just don't know. And another thing I pointed out to him, remember, when I walked out and he told me, ma'am, your daughter is very rude, very rude. She's not going in, right? And I said, what law did she break? And then he told me that the principal said she could not, you know, they were not letting anyone else in. And I said to the sergeant, why didn't he tell me that initially? Why did he have to, was it that he was using his power, executive decision, to not let her in? Then after, when I asked what law did she break, then it was, the principal. And I'll tell you this much, in this gentleman's statement, it was so funny because he said, the officer said to the young lady many times, very nice, ma'am, I'm sorry, you will not be allowed in, unfortunately. And my daughter said nothing like that. Immediately, you know, sharp, abrasive, abrupt tone. You're not going in. It's over, you know, immediately. There was no, ma'am, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, you will not know. So this guy was clearly their friend, this firefighter, because firefighters, it's a charter school. It's in a particular area, and you have to live in the proximity of the school. So this firefighter is the same department as the police. And all these guys know each other, so I don't feel that was even an unbiased, you know, a person. It was their buddy, that so much so that the school resource officer could identify him. So, yeah, that was the same incident, gosh. I have something else for workplace in the medical field, but I'll call back later when it gives other people a chance. But something happened. Remember, my son works in California. He went back out there, and he had a major incident this week. And thank God for the cows. Once again, he was able to get through it. He bumps and bruises, but he got through it, a racist issue. Hmm. But I'll talk to it later. Yeah. In the medical field, no doubt. In the medical field.
Well, we will look for the additional update. I'm sorry he had a tough time, but hopefully, he survived it, and not the worst for wear. And we'll hear hopefully what happened to him a little later on. I guess with your daughter's situation, just again, you know, Dr. Welsing, for many, many years, there was a reason that she said, you know, you play around with sex, the joke is on the offspring, because there is so much to think about and plan for, and I mean, just wow, it is an endless list of things that you will now have to take on and think about as an attempted parent. I mean, it is just, it is massive, and that school presents so many problems, even not even thinking about the, you know, extracurricular activities and after school events, and they got Officer Slam hanging out at the ticket window, and I mean, it's just a lot to deal with as a parent. Record. I guess that's one big thing that we learned. Record. I was thinking with the resource officer, since he got to pick out a witness, he could have just made this firefighter guy up. I mean, if they're going to say, hey, do you think there was a parent who saw this? Can you identify someone and get a statement? Why?
Well, just remember, he called me. The police officer called me when I called, because I called the school that the following day after the incident happened. And, you know, they don't want to put you, because I actually speak to the principal, and they kind of bounce you around to the secretary and then the assistant principal. And, you know, I mentioned his name, that he was there, because I had to kind of tell the story to this one person for them to really realize this was a serious incident. He called me and he was so nice. Hi, yes. And I said, sir, I didn't ask for you to call me. You know, it was so odd.
Was the officer or the firefighter?
The officer. Oh, okay. The officer, okay. The school resource officer. Maybe it was a miscommunication, but I said, no, I'm the parent from last night. My daughter was turned away, and, you know, I did not ask to speak with you. But while I have you, can you tell me the name of that detective? But I wish I would have put his name in the complaint. Therefore, he couldn't have referred a witness, I would think. I'm not sure. Maybe had I named him in the complaint or grievance or whatever it's called, maybe they wouldn't have listened to him, you know, and I could have. And I'm still thinking about calling and speaking with someone else just to kind of have a clear understanding, because like you said, it does leave you feeling so confused. Did I do everything right? Is there something? Are they ganging up together and really not trying to get a resolution to this? You know, it really makes you feel, and my kid is in the school every day. So yeah, it is. It's very confusing.
Terrorism. They form like Voltron. The white parent, the white mom, white woman who was out there running off at the mouth when it happened. The officers, the school officials, even that, like, in my view, that is a subtle form of terrorism right there. Now, we just had this whole nasty interaction. You terrorized my daughter and were crude with her. You terrorized me. These other white passerbys, parents ostensibly, are going by and getting in their little jabs verbally while all of this goes on. I go to make a report that this happened, report it to the school. You report it to the enforcement officials. And they give him your number to call you. Like, wait a minute, that's not what I asked to happen. And furthermore, I now feel even more violated. Why does this guy have my personal information? He shouldn't have my phone number to call me up at home or what have you and do anything else with that. I mean, in my view, that's not an accident. You don't go and report to the school that I was treated in a hostile and verbally violent manner by this official, off-duty officer. And then get a call from this guy. He's talking to you like, whoa, that's not what I asked for at all. And I don't think they would do that in any other circumstance. Just give out a parent's phone number to this person who is the accused. And so, oh, yeah, just call him up and, you know, patch it up. Call her sweetie a few times and, you know, make it all go. Anyway, I do think the officer, I definitely named them. I would request a card so you can identify them by name in your report. But I think he could have lied even. I don't know if this firefighter was there or not. But if you're in a system of racism, white supremacy, and the department, you said he's got about a dozen, maybe three dozen violations for the same type of thing, bias policing and unprofessional conduct and all the rest of it. Hey, this is the guy that they want. I'm sure they're not ignorant about his disciplinary file. They had to send it to you, probably redacted. So they're not ignorant. This is the fellow that they want. And he's doing what they want. This is the type of policing that they want. So, yeah, same thing I said about the medical industry. They're not ignorant. It might have just been, hey, go home, make it a good one. Say that another parent saw it and you were professional and courteous and she was a foul, loudmouth hooligan. Yeah. And matter of fact, he was a firefighter. Yeah. Everybody believes a firefighter. Say it was a firefighter. Firefighter walked by. She was crude and a loudmouth hooligan, and you were a very model of professional, courteous policing and how you talk. Yeah, that's the way. Go home and write that up and put it down, and bam, we'll put that one up. You'll have 25 unfounded reports of unprofessional conduct. They probably told him that. I could be totally wrong, but I mean, everything that you said, firefighter and all the rest of it, he could have totally made this up, and they just, no problem, rubber stamp, bing, unfounded, and moving on to the next one. Go have fun at the next game. If you see any more nigger children, kick them out too. I could be totally wrong, but this is the system of racism, white supremacy, and you did read us a very lengthy disciplinary record that sounded like he's done a lot of the same things before. Maybe even we should be thankful that your daughter was not subjected to unnecessary force, because I think that was one of the violations that I heard that was also unfounded. So, yeah.
Oh, and one was sustained. Report of force, sustained.
Sustained.
Excessive
sustained.
Force. Right. He had one sustained and one not sustained, and then an improper action unfounded. Mm. And then what is this? Bias-based profiling. That was in 2006. Bias-based profiling. Exonerated.
At minimum, you said your daughter is still there. I might take that disciplinary report to the school and ask them, is this the type of person that we want working with children? With these type of charges, some founded, some unfounded, this seems very much in line with the experience that I had with this person. It doesn't sound like this is someone who is reformed, who has undergone sensitivity training. It sounds like someone who has a history of pathological policing in, doesn't matter the environment, here at the school or wherever else he is. It sounds like this is pretty consistent. I might take that report to the school and ask, can we get a different officer? Do we have to have this guy working here? Because is this the type of person that we want working around children? Everything in the form of a question.
That is a really great question, because I'm actually going there in about a week or so for a meeting. And I would definitely, because he doesn't work there. He's not the school resource officer, but he was working off duty, helping, you know, with the school function, with parking and whatever else they do. So he's not assigned there, but I did mention that with the IA sergeant to say he needs to not be allowed to come to school function, you know, work at school if this is how he's addressing the family members and the children, you know, families of students at the school. But I will definitely take this there. I like that. I didn't even think of that.
Just a thought. Just a thought. Much obliged for the update. I've said that for a long time. I always appreciate updates. You know, make sure we are not just on here bumping our gums and giving out, you know, nonsense suggestions. If you, you know, use the strategies, fine. If you don't use the strategies, that is fine. It's, you know, all about problem solving. So if you come up, use your brain computer and come up with your own, you know, ideas about the best way to deal with things, that's great too. You can call and share that also. But I always, always appreciate the updates. And again, sorry that you all had to, man, that right there, that is a one reason why Gus T does not have children. That is, man, terrorism, absolute terrorism. Did any of the folks who are with us have any suggestions on how to deal with that, other than not having your child at the school before we move forward?
Job Eric.
Retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to everyone. I also would go to the school board elected official that serves that area and make a report about the record of that enforcement official at the school that lies within his area, that he or she's area, that they have responsibility for, and put it in the term of a question. As you mentioned, should someone with this type of record be a resource, quote unquote, officer at a school, whether it's public or private? And also the elected official that serves in the area, where you reside with the same question about that enforcement official. And, you know, and from there followed up on what action is taken. Because one thing that is advised is to go through the process of making a quote-unquote complaint about an officer. So the longer the negative record, the more insight you would have or anybody would have from observing his background, his or her background.
Okay. All right. That's good.
And you if know that makes any sense.
And retired firefighter, you know that's Pembroke Pines Police, just to let you know.
Oh, yeah. I remember you talking about it about maybe a month ago, but I forgot it was local, reasonably local. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I would do. I would go to those two sources also and inform them of that. And being that it's in that area, which is in close proximity to the shooting at the high school that took place, within a year, something like that. Mm-hmm. It's a heightened concern, as you know, about resource officers at schools. And with a record like that, you know, it should at least get their attention. I put it that way.
But remember, this is not against the resource officer. This is a detective who was assisting at a school function on an off-duty. So he's
okay, well, I mean, that right there, actually, in my opinion, that right there is even more of a chance of some direct constructive action to be taken, because that person was just making some extra money. You know, yeah. So, and I can see where it's possible by going in that direction also. Not saying that it's automatic, but it's possible that they basically would just not allow that person to get extra money doing that type of work. You know, whether it's standing in front of a door or something at a school, you know, that sort of thing, because of a complaint, and also encourage other people that you may know to do the same thing too, that may have their children at the school, to issue complaints on this person also that you have connections with. That may be somewhat of a situation where you have more people looking into that. That's basically why I'm bringing it up.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. You were about to say something, Gus?
Just to see any other suggestions before, so we can move forward. Any other?
Oh, okay. I was going to give my report on some of those many questions that you were talking about. But
let me see.
If you wanted to, yeah,
let's just
I'll
see.
Wait. Go ahead.
Any other suggestions for our parent here, attempted parent? Any other suggestions? All righty. She'll give us the update. If you think of anything else, any of the folks that are with us, if you think of anything else, feel free to share. Retired firefighter, you going to respond to some of the other questions?
Yeah. Oh, one more thing that I forgot, because the last caller did mention about a firefighter. Yeah, what that type of relationship with the fire department and the police department is a long-standing one, especially with if they're white. As far as they're concerned, even to the standpoint, they don't issue our tickets, and they even have a term for it. It's called professional courtesy. Call it professional courtesy, you know, things of that nature. And it's almost like one and the same, really. The only difference is on the fire department, there's not a visible weapon that you see on them. So, but a lot of times it is a weapon. But anyway, yes, you mentioned about I forget the abbreviation HB Historical Black College. I put it that way. Yes, there has been a lot of discussion, even when I went to two of them, about the difference in quote unquote quality. I think was one of the words that was brought up that would be brought up when it comes to employment market as far as that concern. It's been a long-standing issue in that light. You would get from a person, yeah, when such and such, which is, you know, some sort of firm or institution that is primarily controlled by white people, when they see the resume and they see Florida A&M versus a University of Florida or Florida State, that would, the difference between the two is vast, you know, that sort of thing. I personally didn't have any issues, primarily because of my history through the workplace. With the fire department, it wasn't even required to have a college degree at all. The standard was a high school diploma, actually. I did get a job offer as a teacher on the high school level, but that was based on some other things, really the people who were about to hire me, just wanted to know if I had a bachelor's degree in the subject matter. But I can see where a majority of non-white black people actually probably have some issues, even matched with other non-white black people on that issue. A black person that went to a Grambling versus a black person that went to LSU, they would make a difference between the two, even with two people who are racially classified as non-white black. I gave a report a while back about a code when dealing with black businesses, and I think it was contractors. Make sure that you slow down the process. A lot of time the contractor wants to get right to the work without some sit down and let's talk. You're going to have to produce to me some documents that are essential before you even set foot on my property. As far as equipment is concerned, don't unpack anything. I want to see a license, and I want to see a license that is legitimate, meaning that it has all of the different stamps and dates on it. Because if you don't do that, it can be some problems as far as that concern. As far as the equipment of installment, if it's something that they're installing, to get some sort of guarantee that equipment or installations or whatever they're doing is up to date materials, not something that they got from their backyard. And one thing about it, if you see some sort of negative reaction from that non-white black person on what you're doing as far as business, well, that should be an indication to you that maybe you shouldn't hire that person, because they shouldn't have a problem with any of those steps at all, any of them at all. And I'm learning from things that I did do correct, and I learned from things that I didn't do correct. And the things that I didn't do correct wasn't based upon me doing a lot of stupid stuff. Basically, what I did, I basically took the recommendation when I did make some mistakes off of somebody that I have a lot of trust for. One of my own brothers, biological brothers. I'm not talking about from a metaphoric sense, Gus. I'm talking about somebody who actually came from the same womb. But I was getting my recommendation from that person. And I felt at the time by him giving his approval, directly to me and suggestions that some of that stuff I did, but I know now, no, go through the process yourself from start to finish before, like I said, before any tool from a nail to a jackhammer, whatever comes off of that off of his truck and whatnot. All of that is understood. All of that is understood. His or her, I mean, it may be a female. But those are just some helpful hints that I've learned in the process. I guess you can move on to somebody else. Hopefully that would help to anybody.
Context of white supremacy. Appreciate that. Retired firefighter checking credentials. Is this person qualified to do the work? Very important. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in, if we've not heard from you, if you have comments to share, proceed.
Hi, Gus.
Be in Toronto, Counter Racist Yoga Retreat, May 21 through May 24. Do you have cake pans?
Cake pan?
Yes, cake pans. Like to make cake?
Yes, I have different sizes and different shapes. Are you looking for the circle, the square, or the rectangle?
The circle. Thinking we might do red velvet cake once we get to your neck of the earth. I'm trying not to go through customs with anything that might cause alarm since I am a Negro. So I don't want to travel with cake pan or anything really kitchen related. So if the twin cake pans, like you're going to make a double two-layer cake. Do you have those cake pans?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
Awesome.
The stainless steel, like the one that's coated, and then there's the glass one as well.
Lovely. Might need to borrow those. Hopefully we'll be very, very close to where you reside so we can borrow cake pans to make vegan red velvet cake.
No worries. Consider it done. Greetings to you, Gus, callers and listeners. The news feed that you had a little bit earlier today, where there was an example, I'm not quite sure if the woman who was speaking was white, the one that did the overnight with the non-white doctor, but she had mentioned that other hospital staff came up to her and said that she has to do something right away. And she was trying to redirect them to the appropriate staff, and she figured that it was because of the lab coat. Again, I don't know if she was white. Is there any confirmation as to whether she was white? She sounded white, but I'm not.
The person doing the overnight was a black female. Her name is Adia Harvey Wingfield. She was doing the overnight as a part of her study on racism in the workplace.
Okay. All right. Okay. So then you know what? I'm going to skip this part then because I had missed that. But I can go into the healthcare because there was an article, and I don't know if yourself, callers and listeners are familiar with it. There's an article on News One. It's entitled, White Woman Accused of Pretending to Be a Doctor in Africa is Sued After 100 Babies Die. And it goes along the line of, you know, white people being automatically designated as experts when they know nothing. So just to give you a quick snippet, there was a white woman who claimed that she was a doctor who conducted surgeries resulting in the death of children, 100 babies, perhaps more in total, and this occurred in Uganda. The woman's name is Renee Bach. Renee, R-E-N-E-E, Bach, B-A-C-H. She's a U.S. missionary with no medical background. So Renee Bach had founded a private NGO, non-governmental organization, and a healthcare facility in Uganda in 2012. And she also had a program called Serve the Children, where she took children from the local hospitals and the mothers were led to believe that Renee was a doctor. Her home was also considered a medical facility to the parents. And she was often seen wearing a white coat, a stethoscope, and often administered medications to children in her care. Renee Bach's torture chamber was disguised as a medical facility, and it was ordered to be shut down in 2012, but continued operation. Renee Bach learned the medical procedures by watching YouTube, so that's where she got her expertise, apparently. And Renee Bach also boasted of doing high-level medical practices and expressed enjoying hands-on medical care. Currently, Renee Bach is still in Uganda and was relocated to a different area. In March 2019, Renee Bach was to appear in court, but did not. She had her legal team working for her. The case got delayed all the way to early 2020, so it's anticipated that the case will pick up again. The end of the article reads, "Our condolences goes out to every parent who lost their child under her devilish care." Just as a side note, it's interesting that they didn't call Renee Bach a serial killer. So I just wanted to add that piece in there. In terms of going back to the healthcare, I know that when many of the Black West Indian women came into Canada and the United States, my mother being one, my aunt, my grandmother, my great grandmother, they came in as nurses. And they would tell my sister and brother and their husbands, of course, stories about the horrendous treatment that they were enduring in the hospitals. They were treated like slaves. They were given low pay. They were often yelled at by the white head nurse. The head nurse was usually white, or the charge nurse. So you just hear horror stories to the point that when I grew of age to go into working, one thing I did not want to become was a nurse. What was really interesting was that around mid-1990s, there was an influx of Filipino women, and there were also white women that were coming back into the nursing. Mainly because in Canada, they were getting a nursing drain, and the nurses were heading to the States, being offered more money, more protection, things of that nature. So a lot of the nurses moved from Canada into the States. So Canada started increasing their pay and increasing the regulations to protect nurses from abuse. As a result, because of the low enrollment of black females and males in nursing, and the increased enrollment from Filipino and white nurses for the money, then it was considered a higher level of profession than it initially was. So that's just to also add some insight. Also related to my personal experience, because my field that I'm in, would be considered a non-registered caregiver, and in that I would be able to work in group homes and different types of facilities. It's just that I wouldn't be able to do things that a nurse would do, such as give a flu shot or replace a trach, things of that nature. So what I had noticed is that whenever I was working with white people, and particularly white women, because it's a women-driven field, the automatically professionals and clients and or patients would defer to the white woman. One case in point was I was working on an assignment with a white woman at a group home, and this white woman had disclosed to me that this was her first job, and she had literally just left the cashier job at Longo's. Interestingly enough, she was able to land a full-time job with benefits. And then there's myself, who has over 12 years expertise in the industry, and has been going from contract to contract to contract. And the parents for one of the residents came in. They automatically deferred to her as the expert. They were asking her questions about her educational background. They were asking her recommendations. And I'm hearing this white woman talk as if she knows what she's talking about. I'm listening, and I can hear all the mistakes that she's saying. I can hear the stuff that could actually even cause liability, right? But I didn't say anything. I just, well, if she's going to, you know, fall on her own sword, let her fall on her own sword. She just kept talking and was really tacky, because not once did they ask about my expertise. Not once did they even talk to me. So I don't even know how they could make such a thing. So it was neither here nor there for me. Also, to give a quick update on the plantation, I come to find out that the job that was the permanent job that was given hiring policy, I didn't know there was a hiring policy, so I went to it and saw it. But I was informed that there was an interview of which I was not informed of before. I was informed that typically the contract person would have first dibs on the permanent position, but it was very interesting, but not surprising. Typical white fashion, this is what they do. And then, interestingly enough, on another note, when you mentioned, Gress, about the Voltron effect, I immediately thought of wasps. and that wasp meaning a white Anglo-Saxon person, but it's like when you swipe one, more come, and yes, they just collect together and are just ready for the attack, and they're ready to lie for each other. It's a criminal organization, and to always keep that in mind when dealing with white people, that they will form immediately into a gang, into a mob, into you know, a tsunami of liars and abusers. And this is how they maintain white supremacy. Thank you, and I leave the line.
A tsunami of liars. Wow. That is who are going to be having that lab coat on, and they are not going to be thinking, oh, I'm not a doctor or I'm not qualified. It's, hey, I'm a white man. I'm a white woman. I can do whatever I want. These are just dumb niggas anyway. I can do whatever I want. Like, that's what it's Rene Bach. I don't have to go to school. I don't even have to finish high school, middle school even. I'm a white woman, and they're just niggers. The man not, the woman not, I can do whatever I want. Go over here and kill 100 black children on the continent. Who cares? White people in the lab coats, one of the most dangerous things. Ignorant about so much that's happening here. A hiring, let me read this here. And then, what cool little tidbits do we see? Oh, wait a minute. Full-time employees have first dibs. I see. So that means probably a full-time white woman who is way underqualified and in any type of circumstance would get the job before me. Long as they're full-time. Hiring policy. Maybe that's something we should ask. Are there any other, do you all have a hiring normally? A full-time employee, but as you said, hey, I'm just a cashier, and now look at me. I am living the life. That story has been replayed over and over and over and over. White woman, white man, anywhere in the known universe. Same thing we heard in the opening segment with the healthcare. Wait a minute, this white dude, unless he's Albert Einstein, his personality is terrible. This white woman is terrible. She's incompetent. What do you mean we got, oh, they're friends? Oh. That is the system of white supremacy. I was a cashier, but me and Susan are friends. The number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. I will get through another of our emails just to make sure we don't miss anything. It's from a non-white female. Hello, Gus. Male race soldiers crying in the workplace came up on last week's show. Yes, I have experienced this from a former boss. It was fake, tacky, and trashy, lacking in any sincerity. He was pretending to show emotion over a situation that had happened. It's too long ago for me to remember what, but I do not believe a word he was saying. Most unsettling of all were his glassy blue eyes that would stare right into mine, a true psychopath. One day I met with him in his office. It was before all the fancy gadgets that people use to secretly record conversations were available. Midway through our discussion, which was about mistreatment I had experienced, he got up out of his seat, walked over to his desk, and reached underneath and ripped off a dictaphone that was taped to it. He proceeded to turn over the tape and said, "Don't worry, I'm not recording you." I was stunned. "Finally, I'm sorry to hear you were fired from your yoga position, detailed last week. Unfortunately, I do know another black male who was able to get fired on his day off." Woo! Cue the Friday music. I did not know how frequent of an occurrence that is, but man, that is special effort in the system of racism, white supremacy, to actually get fired on a day when you are not working for activities, conduct that did not happen on the clock. And you were not on social media calling people hussies and coons. Final, he was also in the fitness industry. He was sent on a training course, so technically still on the job, but away from the office and people he usually worked with. He did not want to eat the food they prepared, so he had brought his own with him. He forgot to bring a fork with him. He asked to use one from the organization, but they refused. Unfortunately, he did not control his emotions and ended up arguing with the staff. He was then fired. Oh my God, I'm sorry for laughing because that's not funny, but wow. I mean, that's what I said. The getting fired on your day off is like embarrassing regardless, because it's like, yeah, it's racism, white supremacy, but I mean, wow. I brought in my food and I forgot my fork. And I got a rick. Come on. Woo. I don't even know what the moral to the story is. Remember your own silverware. We had the caller at the courthouse in Florida over silverware. He shared, it was a black female on the job at the courthouse, and she came in and she was going to eat. And I guess she maybe forgot her silverware too. She didn't have one. And the white woman came in and made some snide remark. You could just eat with your hands. This black female did control her emotions. She did what we say do always. You stay in the question lane. And she just responded, do you eat with your hands? And that cleared out the whole lunchroom. That was that. She didn't. I don't think she got fired. He didn't give us that update. I am really sorry to hear that. Not surprised. I don't know if there's a moral I can draw from that other than manage your emotions. That's the moral to draw. Manage your emotions. I say that with every broadcast. No other aspect of Counter Racism Code matters if we cannot keep our composure so that we're not, you know, having spats, arguments with white people, even at a training that is away from the actual facility where you work at. Managing emotions, critical in the system of racism, white supremacy, even though it can be very challenging because sometimes things can escalate quickly. A fork. Not just allow, you know, niggers to have forks around here. I mean, you uppity enough to bring in your own food. You should have been uppity enough to bring in your own utensils. You can't have a fork. Woo. Hopefully nobody else has utensil stories that work out bad for black people or stories of being terminated on your day off. All horrible. System of white supremacy. Other folks, I'll give out the number again. 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Other folks with us, if you have commentary, proceed.
Hi, can you just start speaking?
Yes, ma'am, we can hear you.
Oh, sorry. Well, I've had so many experiences at work lately, but does anybody have any suggestions for controlling your anger at work? Because I recently just lost my cool at work, and thank God they have white noise in the air, so they couldn't really hear, I guess. But I was being harassed by one of my coworkers for an email that I sent, and as soon as she emailed me, then she came to my desk, and I had to leave my desk. She would not. I asked her like five times. I got up and left. Then she followed me, and good thing I had the presence of mind. I said her name and said, "Stop harassing me," and I said about three times. Then one of my coworkers said, "You know, ignore her, whatever." But I was allowed. Another lady came out of her office, and then finally, my manager came over, and the white female. So I sorted her out. I said, "No," I said, "You go talk to her. I'm staying here," because I'd already told her when she was at my desk, "You should not be confronting me about something I emailed out in the open work area." So she went into the manager's office crying. Then the manager emailed me like hours later and says, "Oh, can you give a detailed description of what happened," whatever. So I emailed her just like what I just said, and I made sure I put harassed. She was harassing me. And so the next day, I see human resources going into the director's office, and then my boss meeting with the supervisor. So, I mean, but nothing has happened to me yet. I'm sure they put something in my file. But I just wonder if anybody got any suggestions how to control your anger at work, because with this new manager, as soon as she saw me on day one, she's rolling her eyes at me. I literally didn't even say anything to her. So I'm just assuming that she's a racist, which I'm assuming that about all of them, all the white people. But, and so she's just been doing, I mean, I could go on about the little things she's been doing since she started as a manager. Okay, so she's giving them the green light to mess with me. Any suggestions of controlling your anger? Because, like I said, I do need to work to pay my bills.
Absolutely. That is.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know if you were there.
Oh, yeah. I was listening.
Yeah.
The system of white supremacy, you know, they demand that we have lots of expenses and then make it difficult for us to go about paying for those expenses. With your situation, I guess I would say, number one, if you are feeling angry or frustrated in the workplace, that's important. I don't know how long you've been there, but if that is, if you're feeling that sort of anxiety.
Over a decade.
Oh, okay. Okay. I don't know if this is a recent thing or if you've been dissatisfied with this place for a decade, or if it's, you know, new employees and where things are now that have you feeling more frustrated. But I do think that's important. Sometimes, you know, environments change where they are not the best for us anymore. And sometimes that might be a signal from our body, that frustration, that anxiety, that anger, that maybe this is not for me. But if this is, I've been here long enough, I'm entrenched, I might be able to retire and benefits and all the rest of it. Okay. I generally recommend, in terms of anger, like the situation that you mentioned where this white woman comes over and is harassing you about an email or what have you, exactly what you did, extracting yourself from the situation once you have asked. And I wouldn't even ask five times. For me, it would be, I'm going to ask one time for you to exit the area. If you're not going to leave at that point, I would leave. And at that point, I would be making a report that I've asked this person to, you know, give me space, that the way that the conversation is happening is not constructive and we might have to engage at a later date because, you know, the person is harassing me and I don't feel safe. That's what I would have added. That's what I recommend consistently. Use the word unsafe. I felt unsafe, or I did not feel safe. Such and such, Jennifer was harassing me about an email and I felt unsafe in the way that she talked to me. I asked if she would leave so that we could address the matter in a professional, calm manner at a later point. She refused to do so. I extracted myself from the situation and underline safe. I did not feel safe. That's if I had to say it more than once, I would do so. I would extract and either go to a restroom, go to the vehicle. I think we had somebody else who used that before where they had a white woman who was harassing them and they just went out and got in their vehicle. But I would extract myself from the situation once it's got to that point where they're just going to stalk you and all the rest of it. I would totally extract and it would not be any more conversation, maybe for that whole day after that. And in the write-up, I would say safety and harassing as well. I knew this was going to be a situation with a crying white woman. We just had the email report about the weeping white man, where they have harassed you and been yelling and refusing to give you space and all the rest of it. And then they're going to stalk you afterwards. And then after they don't get their way, classic racist. Oh, I'm the thing. I was trying to talk and she just wouldn't listen to me and I wanted to solve a problem and we're supposed to be friends and it's Black History Month and I brought fried chicken for everyone and I just can't believe this happened consistently. And it'll be like, oh my gosh, what did you do to mess over Heather? She see the fried chicken she brought? It's Black History Month. Make a report. I felt unsafe and I would ask one time. Once I see that they're being hysterical, they're being unprofessional with how this is being addressed, I would ask one time and then I would extract myself. If it's opposite gender, meaning you're female, if it had been a male, I'd have just went to the female's bathroom. That would have ended all of that. And then you can, you know, take as long as you need to breathe and compose. If it's another female, that probably wouldn't work. Then I might even leave the building in total, go to my vehicle. And I would write up that way. I had to exit because I didn't feel safe. This person was harassing me. They were being loud, verbally abusive, all the rest of it. I felt unsafe and I needed to remove myself from the situation. It was threatening and unprofessional. In terms of the rest of emotional control, once you can get some space, because when you get attacked like that, it can be hard, especially if it's out of the blue, as they say. I'd want to try to get a spot to myself. If that's in my vehicle, if they have a private bathroom area or any place, if that's going outside, going to a park, anything, I would try to get space alone where you can sit calmly and just breathe, drink some water. Drinking water alone helps lower your blood pressure. Drink water and just breathe. Take long, deep breaths. Take inhales and exhales and just try to release. Get your heart rate back down. Even when you were recounting some of the details that happened, like you started speaking a little bit faster. And I know for myself, when you remember and are having to relive and share those experiences, you can feel your emotions coming up. You can feel the anger and the emotion. So deep breaths. Try to slow things down, maybe even close your eyes. That's why I say if you can get to a spot where you're alone and safe, you don't have to worry about your immediate safety. You can close your eyes and just take some really deep breaths, inhale, exhale, and just process what just happened, because sometimes it can be difficult to even make sense of what just happened. I was trying to write an email and then Jennifer came over and did what? And I mean, just process. Let me just try and think for myself, like, okay, this is what just happened. Okay, I know she's probably in crying to the boss now. I'll make sure I write up my report. Unprofessional, unsafe. Then you can kind of process how you want to deal with things. But I think that's huge, because so many times we just get kind of caught off guard with these attacks and we get frustrated or respond however, as opposed to being able to step back, kind of remove ourselves from the initial attack, initial event, get some space to process what happened, and then kind of calm down and figure out how we want to deal with things from there. But yeah, I'm a big advocate. Extract yourself from the situation, monitor your breathing, monitor your speech. If you can see that you're kind of talking faster than you normally do, slow down. Even put your hand on your chest, feel your heart, slow things down, drink some water. Process the event, maybe even write some notes on your phone about what happened, put that in your workplace journal, and then you can move forward. Any of the folks that are with us, do you have suggestions on how you would deal? You're feeling frustrated, the white people are getting you angry in your work environment, maybe to use that against you. Any suggestions on how to combat that, how to keep your cool?
Yes, sir. Re-examine your expectations of the personnel. Even spend some time physically writing down different profiles that you encounter. Create distance. Whether it's physical or as far as movement, if you can, moving your desk or moving away from the adversary, wear earplugs. Be consistent at wearing earplugs. Most cases when a person, even a racist, sees someone that is wearing earplugs, they know that that actually discouraged them for, you know, approaching you. Always have them in your ears, unless this is against the rules of your job in some sort of way. In a lot of cases, it's not. But always have them in. You may be listening to something, or you may not be listening to anything through those earplugs. But your adversaries may not know that. Those are some additional things that I would possibly examine, and that's all I can think of right now. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. I know we have a number of Cal's listeners who use the earplugs to create some distance from other folks. I think we had some people last week or recently who said you have to be careful because they will switch the policy up on you. They see, oh, this nigger is got earplugs or earphones. We'll go in and just adjust the policy and procedure. No earplugs in the workplace. Take that. So you do have to watch that one sometimes if white people see that you're enjoying those. But that can be a great strategy to kind of keep things down. Make sure you can still hear what's happening around you, though. That can be important in the workplace. Any other suggestions? Managing your emotions, adjusting your expectations, great one as well. Any other suggestions for managing your emotions?
He said adjust expectations. What does he mean by that?
Well, that your adversary is not going to have the same level of courtesy that you're going to have. And when we go into the workplace, that's a science lab for mistreatment in the first place. There should be an expectation that white people are going to say any gamut of things with the idea in mind on purpose to get you angry. And through the reexamining of your expectations, it's like a political exercise, so to speak, that you're actually strengthening yourself against that type of behavior. And based on them not getting the desired response, science would tell you that they, in a lot of cases, would just leave you alone. By you getting angry, it gives them more fuel. If I'm being misinformed, it actually gives them fuel to see the black lady react in an anger mode, and also they don't mind calling you into the office and terminating you either for the same purpose. That's just some thoughts of mine.
It's just so weird because I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, hopefully I answered your question.
Oh, thank you. That was helpful. I'm going to listen to this too after the call is over. It's just weird because I think that it's because I'm so quiet and shy. I come across as maybe quiet, reserved, soft-spoken in person, that when I get angry, it has the opposite. I mean, I don't think they're expecting that from me. But I still don't want to react that way at work. But when I get angry, they get a little bit nicer afterwards. Like, it's like the worse I treat them, the better they treat me, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I'm friendly and I know we shouldn't be, I know I've listened to the show, you shouldn't be joking with them, whatever. When I'm acting like that, they're very disrespectful towards me.
But then again, that may not be helpful for you with the anger. It may not be helpful for you.
There is a
medical connection with people getting emotional anger in the workplace or anywhere, really. Blood pressure, you know, that sort of thing. So it's a conditioning period that you would have to kind of like, you know, look within and exercise and do constructive type of exercise work to work on that yourself. And expectations play a big part in it. In other words, I expect these white people to behave in the way that they're doing.
I do. But what really ticks me off is that I don't think there's anything I could do about it. And that's what really, it makes me so furious. And I don't understand how it seems like nobody else is as furious as I am. It's like no other black person is as furious as I am with these people. I'm just saying in general, with black people in general, it just seems like people, even on this show, people seem kind of calm, like they're able to talk about it, but I am freaking furious so much of the time, and it's like nobody else is that angry.
May I add commentary, please?
Toronto.
Thank you. There may be a perception that people, in particular black people in similar situation, doesn't present as angry. But to keep in mind that anger comes about in different ways. Some people are not as vocal about anger and may end up eating, causing overweight or causing other ailments. Others may self-medicate through medication, alcoholism, or even other use of substance, such as marijuana and otherwise. There are others that, you know, may have put on the mask, and when they go home, you know, it's a different persona. You know, they're probably very depressed, and just know how to put on a good mask about it when outside in public. Or, you know, there might be domestic violence because of all the pent-up rage. Or, you know, it could be a whole lot of other aspects. So I usually suggest to try and refrain from assuming that other people aren't feeling the effects.
Well, let me give you an example. At someone's job I know, a black woman, a white woman told a black man, he was going down south or something, and she said, "Were you going to be picking cotton down there?" And this black woman had no problem speaking to that white woman after she said that. And she said, you know, I thought about not speaking to her almost after she said that. But it's like, there's no way I would have tolerated that even at that moment. And it's like, it just like black people just like, oh, okay. I mean, you know, that's just, you know, I don't understand. It just, I don't know. But that really doesn't have anything to do with me, how somebody else handles their issue. But I just wonder what's wrong with me that I can't be as, I just can't just brush it off. Like I said, they'll even go speak to these people who say these things, or, you know, or don't stir up the waters. I mean, I was at this other job previously where this white woman called this little black boy a monkey, and then she lied, and after I reported and said that, oh, she calls all the kids that, and I was like, no, she doesn't, and blah, blah. Anyways, I was talking to this other black woman. She said, well, you know, just don't stir the water because, you know, you'll give, you know, let's give her a second chance. You know, it's like, I don't, it just, I don't see where I live and people around me that they are really that bothered by it. They just they have grown to accept it.
I will say that I do think is important for a workplace context, and something that you yourself mentioned earlier. You said that, hey, now I do have bills that I have to pay. I think that's all of the victims of white supremacy. I think that would be everybody here, people who don't participate in the cows, the black female that you said was cool in the gang with that white woman after she said, oh, you're going down south to pick cotton? Racist joke right there. It sounds like a white woman who's not ignorant about racism. But everybody has bills, so that's one. But I regularly, Dr. Welsing encouraged, regularly say that this is terrorism. One of the primary effects of terrorism is fear. You have many, many black people in a workplace context. Their emotion is fear. I hope I don't lose my job. And I have heard that before. That is totally logical. And that goes back to adjusted expectations too. I am not surprised by that response. I understand, Mr. Fuller, the first page of the book. If you don't understand racism, white supremacy, what it is, how it works, everything else will confuse you. That means having appropriate expectations for how white people behave and appropriate expectations for how the victims behave. Because I've heard that a lot, too, where other people think, you know, black people aren't angry about this or how they respond. Fear. I expect black people to be fearful of white people. Whatever would be, you know, any sort of response. Their response is fine, but I expect that. I'm not surprised about that. That doesn't bother me. When you have a lot of black people, victims, who are confused about what racism is and how it works, and they are afraid of losing their job or upsetting this white person. If I get angry with this white person and call her a name or call her a racist or even tell her that I don't like what she just said, am I going to get fired? Are they going to call me into the office tomorrow and, you know, let's have a report? Ann said that you accused her. You were name calling her yesterday. We might have to have you write a report about exactly what happened before we move forward. Then you'll have this in your personnel file that you were rude to Ann yesterday because you called. I mean, there's many, many reasons why victims, black people, would be fearful and have that sort of response. That's a part of adjusted expectations. But I think with white people, when they make the, in terms of just being angry and the emotional response aspect of it. Before I even get to that, I think with other victims, I think because of that fear, a lot of times we don't articulate our anger with white people. Our anger ends up being manifested at ourselves. That can lead to depression, frustration with ourselves. We can end up taking that anger out on other black people that we're around. We go home and we have all that domestic abuse and that sort of thing. The overeating that B mentioned, it can be manifested and is manifested in lots and lots of other ways. That anger about those situations and what happened, and it's not being allowed to be articulated. That's it. Repressed, as they say. That's it. I think, as I just said, with your situation, expecting that, I've talked about that before, taking time before you go into work, I am not surprised about these type of remarks. And in fact, I would encourage, don't be angry with a white person and they make that sort of remark. I'm on a job and a white person says, oh, yeah, I'm going down to Alabama for the weekend or, you know, wherever, Georgia. Oh, you going to pick cotton? I would not be upset. It would not be cause to curse. It would be, whoa, let me get my pen here. What's today's date? Black History Month, love it. 2/7, talking to Ann, going to pick cotton. Boop. Make sure I got that. I might not say anything else. That would just be it. I'm not angry. She's doing what I thought white people are supposed to do. Practice. Birds chirp. Dogs bark. White people practice racism, white supremacy. That should be on a t-shirt. So that would be my thing, like to get to that where I am not angry. I'm not going to have an emotional response because this is exactly the type of thing I would expect them to do. That's exactly what I would expect her to say. And I was already thinking of, what do? I write this one down? Do I ask her to repeat it? Just depends on what the situation is for that day. I think getting more to, if we can get ourselves more to that point, much better way of counter-racist function. I think it's much healthier too. I don't think you can be in a healthy position being angry constantly. White people practice racism, white supremacy constantly, not daily, constantly by the second. So you would just be constantly in a state of rage. That is not healthy for your body to just be constantly angry. And I don't think, at least for myself, when I am angry, I tend not to think logically about how to solve problem. Sometimes people get angry and they start speaking a little faster. They start using language that they normally wouldn't use. Sometimes they curse when they normally wouldn't. Like, I'm just talking about myself. These are things that I know to be true about myself and things that I've seen amongst many other people. When they get angry, it's very few people I know that do their best critical thinking when they are angry. We need high-level critical thinking to neutralize racism, white supremacy, white people. Any other suggestions dealing with making sure our emotions are controlled in the workplace and even our responses to how other victims respond in the workplace? Because I've heard that one before, too. That is very, very common. We used to take up whole programs with people being upset about how other victims of racism respond in the workplace. Any other suggestions?
Well, I have a suggestion for myself now that maybe it might help somebody else. If you think about any of your medication you could be on, any health issues, I don't want to tell too much of my business, but I'm just thinking, you could have a health condition that one of the side effects could be anger, problems controlling your anger, you know? So I'm just thinking about that now, being so angered by white people. And my anger, I think, is so much more intense than other people around because everybody's experiencing this with them in the workplace. But my anger is so much more intense, and I think it could be related to some health issues that I might have going on that I know that's like that could be one of the side effects. And so I think I'm going to talk to my doctor about that on Monday.
Oh, super important. super important. I'm so glad you thought of that, because, I mean, they say that with a lot of if you're on, you know, any sort of medications and what have you, that it can affect your mood or what have you, and have you where you can be more irritable. Sometimes that's absolutely true. Those medications that talked about, those white doctors, it can have a huge impact, and often does have a huge impact on your system, your emotions, how you feel. You don't even know what it is. Like, I mean, the situation is frustrating, but it might be exactly what you're saying, that the medication is amplifying that. So, you know, your emotions are running a little more intense than they would be. You would normally be upset about that, but it's even more so now because of that medication. So, yeah, that's a great question to ask. And I don't know if you, like I said, drinking water is super important. I would have water with you, like, not just a beverage, water. Having water with you when these sort of incidents happen, start to drink some water. It will just, the act drinking water lowers your blood pressure. Drink water.
I drink water constantly.
Love it. Love it. Keep it up. Drink more. Drink that water. I don't know if you have a workout plan, or if you're a hiker, swimmer,
that
runner.
Does help. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Do
I
that.
I started going to the gym. Yeah.
Love it.
It helps a lot.
I would definitely do that, particularly if you can make time on days when incidents like that happen. Just regularly, because that can do a lot with helping to control your emotions. If you can go and work up a sweat, especially if you can do some sustained activity for 30, 45 minutes to really build up a sweat, that can be very helpful for cardiovascular help and just being able to help you with your emotions to get out some of that frustration, anxiety. And eating properly. How could I forget that? Eating properly. I would try to minimize the sugar and eliminate alcohol, because I think if you're feeling emotional, excessive sugar and alcohol is not going to help. I would try to watch the end, probably caffeine too. I'd probably try and watch the intake of the caffeine, sugar, and caffeine, sugar, and alcohol.
Hi, Doc.
Yes, ma'am.
You know what? What I've also find to help with that anger, or because it's a process, what I found for me, since I've been listening to the cows and everything is starting, all the puzzle pieces are starting to kind of click together, incidences and things that I've seen, but not really being able to pinpoint it or articulate it. But I find listening to, because I'm one of those headphones at work people as well, and I'm always listening to, I think I've almost completed all of the interviews with. Okay, yeah, all of the interviews with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. and Dr. Francis Crest-Walsing, because they are constantly reminding you and saying in their interviews, do not waste energy on being angry, just like you said a few minutes ago. But I'm always listening, because at the end of the day, when you're really angry, you're just hurting yourself. With the, like what everyone said, emotionally, physically, all of that. So I listen to all of the archives. I listen to when they update the most recent interviews with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., I listen to those. And he constantly reminds us to not waste our energy on being angry. Put that energy into replacing white supremacy with justice.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, guests, callers, listeners. I just wanted to give the young lady a suggestion in regards to, this is Draftomania, by the way. I wanted to give the young lady a suggestion in regards to what she can do to manage her anger. A lot of what I heard is very effective. But also what I do a lot of journaling. I journal, you know, I write about, like, my frustrations and my anger. That's how I get a lot of my, that's a form of me venting, you know, because I may not be able to express myself to anyone or had a conversation with people that may be able to understand what I'm talking about. So by writing it down how I'm feeling, it allows me to process my emotions, to get them out in a healthy manner. And also, what you've been going through is basically you're being dated into a argument. The whole purpose of them, acting the way that they're acting is for the purposes of a reaction. That's exactly what they want you to do. They want you to react. I do a lot of research. I listen to a lot of YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos on or just self-improvement and trying to learn more about the root causes of, getting to the root cause of why you're upset, looking at something, taking an inventory on yourself to see what's going on with you, how you're feeling, checking in with your own emotions and your feelings throughout the day, as opposed to repressing, stuffing, because as we discussed, what happens is then you have you will end up acting out and unhealthy. You'll have unhealthy mechanisms to try to manage your emotions because you're not dealing with it in a healthy manner. So, if you're going through something at that time at work and you're doing the breathing, you're walking away, you're trying to escape, things like that, what you can always do when you get a minute is write. Because, if you write down, journal, keep a little journal, or you can also download an application. It's called, I think it's Notepad, or sticky notes, something like that. It's like a little app. It's an app where when incidents happen, this is what I do. I'll just put it, I'll document it on that, on my phone. And it keeps the notes as to the incidents. And so maybe you get home later that day, you have an opportunity, you can go ahead and write down, a little bit further as to what was going on during that day. And walking also is a good thing. Listening to positive affirmations and hertz, 432 hertz music and things like that. Meditation mantras and things like that. That's some of the things that I do to try to stay calm and just try to remember that. When you do a little bit more research on narcissism abuse. When a person reacts to being antagonized, this is a narcissist. They do that for the reaction. It's the fuel. That's what they want you to do. You have to look at the fact that you can't control other people. And I would get really upset and pissed off too, because the reason why I was getting so pissed off is because I was trying to control things outside of myself. I can't control what other people do. I can't control how other people act. They're going to be who they're going to be. And even if you don't react, they're going to be who they are going to be. So the only thing that I can't control is me, and once you start to realize that and accept that on a real level, then it makes life a whole lot easier. It's hard. Yeah. When somebody is provoking you and they're doing things intentionally, but when you know that that's what they're doing, and if you really understand that they're doing this just to get you pissed, you will stop allowing yourself to be their puppet, because at the end of the day, all they're going to do is sit back and laugh, and they're getting a kick out of it. So you don't want to give them that satisfaction. You don't want to continue to be somebody that they can just push a button, and then you're just they're just pulling your emotional strings anytime they feel like it. So, just that alone, just for the spite of it, makes me not even want to react to the way, when I see that people are doing those things to me anymore. So I hope that was useful. I hope you'll be able to utilize some of the suggestions, and that's all I have. Thank you.
Much obliged. Excuse me. Much obliged, Draftomania. Very important suggestions. Did any other folks have suggestions for our female caller?
Would anybody suggest, I could pursue something with the harassment aspect of it. See, that's why I don't know where to go from here. You know, the harassment part. Recently, a black woman in my city sued my employer because she was being harassed, and they didn't do anything about it. She reported it, and she, I believe she did win the lawsuit. That's what a co-worker told me. So I'm wondering if I could do something with the harassment. Since I did, not only that, but I can tie it into my medical situation because, that it is now, it's documented that I actually was, you know, she was harassing me, and I did yell at her at work, which is, you know, I lost my temper at work. So I wonder if I could maybe do something with that. I don't even know if I want that on my record, though, that, you know, that, well, you know, if I pursue it from a medical position, that, heck, maybe I can't be working then.
I would talk to, if you have a therapist that you're seeing already, or your doctor, if you can go talk to them and let them know about the harassment situation at work, the specific episode, I would write a detailed report of the event. Since you had to explain what happened to them, I would write a detailed report for yourself, but I would go see your healthcare provider and let them know about that event and how it impacted you, and see if they can see what they say, because they might, you know, give you a statement or say that you need to be away from work. They'll look at how this might have exacerbated your current medical condition. FMLA, you can look at that policy as well. But I mean, it would be about records, like lots and lots of notes and documentation about what has happened. Like, that generally puts you in a better position. I know Mr. Fuller recommends not getting a lawyer because that could end up costing a lot of money and taking a lot of time and nothing being resolved. If you are going to pursue a legal matter, I would make sure that you are very cognizant. It could be a long, probably will be a long process. It's not going to be something that'll be resolved in a week or a month, that it could be years, because sometimes that's, you know, literally what it is. Sometimes years for those suits to come to some sort of conclusion, if at all. So I'd be very having correct expectations about that. I've heard Mr. Edward Williams talk about that a lot as well, if that's the route that you want to go. But lots of documentation. I would go see your healthcare provider urgently to explain the situation, as I said, and how this has impacted your health. Lots of notes, and just being truthful if you want to pursue that over a long period of time.
Well, thanks for your help, everyone.
For sure, for sure. Context of white supremacy. Give us the update and let us know if we can help in any way. Other folks, if there's anybody that we missed totally, the number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you'd like to join us. Folks who haven't been able to share at all, don't wait till the last minute. We have about 20 minutes left in the broadcast.
Hi, Gus. It's me from Toronto. The call had dropped while I was in mid-sentence, and so I called back in.
Oh, wonderful. I'm sorry. Phone interference, 11 whole years. That's what we've had. Did you want to continue from where you got disconnected?
Sure. I actually Draftomania has mentioned a lot of the points that I was going to add. The only one other thing that I would, well, actually two, is number one, embrace the anger. And the reason why I would recommend embracing it is because in this system where we're being literally terrorized each time, we're being told that we have to, we can't feel the anger, we can't feel the pain. Feel the anger, feel the pain, but also set a limit, a time limit as to how long you're willing to do that. If you find that it's going to interfere with your day-to-day functions, then clearly it's not being managed well. So then this is where I would suggest a technique called anchoring. It's an NLP, which is a neuro-linguistic programming technique, so that if you are tending to ruminate or fixate on that anger and it builds and builds, then one way you can do is you can give yourself a symbol or a sign or a word to stop it, to help bring you back to present. Because usually it would be either you're reacting to what has occurred to you in the past, or you are reacting to what may happen to you in the future because you don't know how you're going to be terrorized in the future. But in the present, when you try to keep yourself in the present, then it gives you that space and that degree of serenity that you can hone in for yourself. So consider the anchor method as well. Thank you. I leave the line.
Love it. Love it. Context of white supremacy. Other folks, if you have comments, suggestions, questions to share, line should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I have a few reports I wanted to share from the week. My first one is there was an observation I had while a customer was coming to the desk, and the supervisor, a white woman, walked through the door and walked toward the black female coworker that I worked with. And she, and speaking of emotions, a lot of these reports kind of involve that. She approached her saying, "Well, can you call this customer back? They want to know how much something would cost, or could they get a copy of something?" And she just put it on the desk, and the black female just looked over to the customer that was sitting next to where she was as though she was overwhelmed. And, you know, a white woman walks off saying thank you, so she didn't respond. So she, now this is a direct quote, "I'm going to go on break before I blow a gasket." That's exactly what she said. So she got up and she walked out and went on a 15-minute break. And she came back and she was just saying basically, yeah, you know, she just came over. She was talking to the other black female, saying that, yeah, she doesn't even say good job or anything. She just brings over these requests. So I guess, once again, the feeling and the encounter of just, I guess, being underappreciated, I guess. And like I mentioned before, we have two sides of a department, white people on one side and black staff members, me and two other black staff members on the other side. So clearly we are not treated correctly, all equally correctly or whatever. So my next one is same black female. We were given a sheet, right? A sign-up sheet for active shooter training in the courthouse, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to sign it yet because it may be an issue with scheduling and someone being available to cover the job task that I do. So I'm just going to wait a couple of weeks. But we usually get like a name list, right, where everyone in the department's name on it. So one time in the past, a car went around, and the only person named that wasn't on it was this black female, right? So she pointed it out before, and then it happened again. yesterday. So the white supervisor, she passed out a list of these names for, you know, if anyone needed a spare list if they wanted to pass around a card or something. So I handed her the list that she needed to check her name on because I hadn't checked it this time. So I had to go back and get my list so she can check her own name off of it. Like, you know, let me say it again. Like, I had a list on the desk, and this one was a correct one. It had her name on it, and everybody else's name was checked off on that other list. So I had to add my own one so that she can check her own name off of it, and then they got rid of the first list. So I ended up going to take that list to the supervisor. So they put a question mark by my name. So I'm still trying to figure out if I was going to attend the training. I think I am, but it's going to take, I guess, a couple of weeks to see who's going to be available. But my next one is, there was I think it was a racist metaphor, but we tend to use the term team a lot to refer to the office staff. And I use the word team, okay? And I did it with a strategy to see how a person will respond, right? Because he asked me about being trained to do trials up in court. So as I stated before, I think this is exploitative, and he's trying to do it for his own selfish personal gain. So I said, no, I can't do it. You know, I got other stuff to do, basically. You know, it was courteous or whatever. So, and he said, you know, I can have you trained up tomorrow. You know, I can have you trained tomorrow. So I said, man, you know, you don't have anybody? Y'all have a team yet? That's how I said it. I asked the question. He said, oh, yeah, you know, we have team. We got a team now. But, you know, we're going to need more players, you know. So he goes into a football metaphor, right? And, you know, just in case somebody gets their ACL torn, we're going to need blank, which is my name, that can get in there. And then, you know, I said, wow. And he said, well, hey, you know, was that a good one? And then I only just said, hey, I'm going to remember that one. And then I just walked off. My fourth one is, I was calling in one time, and I noticed racism being practiced on the voicemail. So if the supervisor doesn't answer, her voice will come on the answering machine, right? And so she says, well, you know, I'm unavailable to answer right now. If you could just call back and leave a message, and if you really need to urgently speak with someone, you can call back and speak to two different people. She named two different white women in the department, gave the extensions and everything. The first white woman was an assistant supervisor, so it made logical sense. But the other assistant supervisor in the department that I work in wasn't mentioned, the black female. So, you know, no ignorance. They're not ignorant. So I'm like, man, I didn't realize that at first. I guess because I don't call in that much. But I'm like, wow, they didn't even include her in the answer machine. So that also excludes our side of the department. My last one is, no, actually, I have two more. My second to last is, I was walking through a department, and I think some unjust networking was practiced because there was a white woman that asked me, hey, did you try any of such and such as banana bread or something like that? And I was like, oh, no, I didn't try any of it. I said, did you try it? She said, yeah, it was good. You know, you should really go over there and try some. I said, nah, I'm good. You know, I don't want to I don't want to mess up my diet plan. So, but how would she know what's going on in the department that I work in? She way on the other side of the office. She in traffic. See, so, you know, talking about me. And my last one is, there was a quote from a meeting that occurred after the King holiday. And I thought this was a genius codification. Black female was in a supervisor meeting, right? So she said the black male brought up about what are we going to do for Valentine's Day? And nobody responded, right? So the black female said that another black female was looked at, asked that question, and she just said, well, y'all do whatever you're going to do. So she basically rejected and refused it. And this black female asked the question. It was kind of lowered. She looked over and said, man, they skipped one holiday. What's the point of skipping another one or something like that? She said, if they skipped one holiday, it wouldn't be a big deal to skip another one. Basically, you know, talking about how they didn't, you know, acknowledge the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. So I thought that was interesting. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Much obliged, caller in Florida. Did you get an update on the shanking situation from last week? The sergeant who was going to shank you for being, you know, a shady character in the courthouse?
I haven't really gotten an update on that. I just heard that I guess that the person was talked to or whatever. I hadn't really seen him around that much. So I don't know if they tried to switch him to another building, you know, as you say, or as this man said, white people don't get fired, they get transferred. But I have noticed the behavior is being different. Like the security not speaking to me very much, and I don't speak to them. So that's pretty much been the aftermath of it.
Violence in the workplace. Take it seriously. Let's see. The fella, I would not participate. I know in a lot of jobs they have little clubs and activities. They'll have a softball team or a basketball team or whatever. I would not participate in any of that. I wouldn't care if it was all black people. My family could be there. I'm not doing any of it. In fact, as soon as they start, and part of the pitch is, oh, yeah, we got to have you be. I wouldn't care if it was a reading club. We got to have you be a part of the club, because if Timmy tears his ACL, then we tears his ACL. I'm not doing anything with you all where I'm going to tear my ACL. I'm good. Thank you. We don't even need to continue the dialogue. No, thank you. Moving on with my day. I'm busy. I got lots of things to do. I don't have any free time. I have a full schedule. Don't have time for anything extracurricular. Thank you for thinking of me. Let's see. The black female, where you notice the pattern, the card goes around. They don't give her a chance to sign it, or they send the list around, and her name is not on it. These are not accidents. 'Cause, see, they don't forget when it's, hey, we need $25 because Jim is about to, they don't forget then. They don't say then, oh man, we don't know where the colored folks are. Did we forget to come by your desk to get the 25? Oh, well, we'll get, they don't forget. They come by and ask repeatedly. That's been my experience. Then they forgot when it was introduction time to introduce the new employees. They forgot then too. Just noticing that pattern of, we forget when it's something constructive, something that might be beneficial. If we want you to donate, you know, $50 or something like that, oh, yeah, we'll make sure. Come around to round you up then. Let's see. The banana, like I said before, you know, we're not eating anything. I don't care what it is. You already got them at the ready. Peanut allergies, gluten-free. I'm keto. I'm vegan. I'm fasting. I'm on a diet. I mean, bam, 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 bam. You got about 50 of them, like, at the ready. I don't eat
anything, and this would be the same thing if I worked with a whole lot of black people, my family included, I'm not eating anything in the workplace. In fact, I think we should get that whole thought process, because I used to be like that, like food in the workplace. Yes, we're going to have cupcakes or whatever. I'm good on all of that. Like nothing. I don't care what it is. If they, cause sometimes they'll get that, oh, you're vegan, and they'll do vegan. I'm good. I don't want anything. I don't trust any of you all to put your hands on anything. Like, I'm good. And especially when they get to the force it, oh, you got to go around. It was the best banana nut bread. And sometimes they'll force it on you. Like, if you don't go get it, they'll come and bring it on your desk. Like, uh-huh, thank you. And I just put it in a napkin, wait till I get to the bathroom. They slipped all kinds of rat poison and everything else. How did she, the one who works in traffic, who was telling you to go get the banana bread, how did, what comment did she make about what you had been doing or not doing, where you knew she had kind of been, you know, keeping you under surveillance?
I think, well, you know, I know the, I think a term I've been using is a clique member. She is a part of the clique, I think. She's just in the traffic department. And so this one white female has been getting her friends hired for like the past 7 years. So she, you know, they all talk with each other in these little text chats and stuff. So I did actually see her come over to, I guess, get some of the banana bread stuff or whatever it was, because it was for the same lady's retirement that they were asking for the $25. The lady said she didn't want a large to do, and they did the opposite of what she requested. And so they brought in all this food. So she came over there, and then as I was walking through the department, she had asked me, said, hey, did you get some of that? Such and such, she named the girl that made it, another clique member. And I said, no, I didn't get any. I said, did you get any? And she says, yeah, you know. And I said, how was it? She said, it was pretty good. And you should go and try some. I said, oh, no, I'm all right. I'm good. I don't want to mess up my diet plan. And, you know, I just walked off, and she was trying to be extremely courteous for some reason. So I guess they're just talking like, hey, you know, watch being around him, you know. You're going to report. So he may report us, just like the other one that was saying, oh, was there anything that I did? You tell me, right? If I did something, I'm like, I'm not talking about you, you know? So once again, they know what they are doing, and they know that I've been reporting. So they don't know what I'm going to report next, or what angle is going to be, or how I'm going to do it, where I'm going to do it.
I see. Gotcha. Now, with all that information, I definitely wouldn't eat it in that context, because that's why, from the audio report last week where they had the woman who said that they don't listen to her. They don't listen to her ideas in the workplace, so she just stays quiet and makes cookies. I'm good. I don't eat any cookies at all. I'm great. That's the same attitude I would have. Like, the clique member is coming and offering anything. And, oh, another clique member made it. I'm good. Y'all can't even keep your paws off my water. I'm good. I'm not eating anything here. I bring all my own snacks. Bring all my own forks, even. Make sure we don't have a tussle over utensils either. I mentioned the one about the black female. That wasn't her. She wasn't involved. The black female that they told her she could eat with her hands.
Oh, that was the one that told me about, she was in a meeting and they were asking about doing something for Valentine's. Like, well, they missed one holiday.
Love it.
Well, it's another, man, like that question. I was like, wow, my goodness. So they've been trying to get her to participate as well. But it seemed like it's only her and myself, the only two, you know, not participating. So whenever they see us talking with each other, they're like, oh my God. Like, I mean, turn red in the face. And start just from two black people talking. Two particular black people. I got to hurry up and get on down the hallway.
I have heard that before in the system of white supremacy. It's bad enough we have one nigger here that we have to watch who is reporting unjust networking, even making up these terms and such, even to accuse us. And we got another one around here muttering that we left out MLK Day or some nonsense and asking a question. Now we got two of them together. So we'll have a mutiny in the courthouse if we're not careful. We got to keep an eye. More unjust. Now, let's get on here. Let's get the click together. We got to get on this, man. Look at this. I've heard that consistently. There's an audio, Mr. Williams with counterracism.com, where he played where it was the same thing, where a black male who was also trying to be constructive in the workplace, and he said a white person just told him flagrantly, we do not, meaning white people, we do not like to see that. You all fraternizing in the hallway if it looks like it's going to be constructive. Now, I bet if you all were just sitting out talking, boy, that Pat Mahomes is something, isn't he? Don't you think the Chiefs are going to? No problem. It would have been nothing. Great. Right on. Talk about the Super Bowl all you want. No problem. These two, they might be talking about who they're going to report next. Man, see if we can get one of them transferred or fired. Get something in there. Employee personnel, poison some more water. We'll think of something. The click, get on those text messages. Much obliged from the courthouse in Florida. Always a PhD study in white supremacy racism. We did our 3 hours. Person at 2899, we did our 3 hours. It says that you dialed in the last 6 minutes. Did you have something workplace racism related?
Hi, Gus. May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I'll be very quick since we're at the end of the show. I just want to first say that I'm sorry, you know, what happened with you and losing your job. I've been there. And the next question I wanted to maybe ask you or maybe some of the listeners, what type of self-care would you recommend for victims of white supremacy racism? I've been finding that I've been getting more and more, I guess, depressed, specifically at work, because I see a lot of the white people, you know, that are moving ahead in terms of promotions and raises. And it seems that, you know, regardless of the credentials or how well you contribute to the team, that we're stuck. And I know a lot of people, you know, might suggest, well, you know, you can go to a different company, but, you know, after listening to your show for some time, it seems that regardless of what company you go to, you know, until the system is replaced with justice, it's going to pretty much be a common theme, you know, in the workplace. And I've kind of been finding that I've been getting more and more depressed and just kind of feeling, you know, stuck, you know, in a rut at work that, you know, I'm never going to be able to, you know, promote or to move forward because, obviously, the white supremacy and also the office politics. So what type of self-care might the listeners or yourself recommend? And is it normal for victims in the system of white supremacy to find themselves basically in a depressed type state about their overall, you know, outlook, not necessarily in life, but more so in terms of work?
Much obliged, caller. Sad to hear that. All of that is by design. I mean, I'm not saying this to make light. I'm saying it in a very literal sense. Like, if you think you are depressed, like, man, imagine being in a cotton field in Virginia in 1819 or sharecropping in Louisiana in 1928. pick your era, like, it's all very depressing and designed to be so in the system of white supremacy. So it's very common. I think we've talked about that pretty much all evening with workplace racism. Black people in the healthcare industry who graduated from college, HBCU or whatever, and they're not credentialed, not promoted, not hired, thought of as dumb and ignorant, unworthy. We've been talking about that quite a bit the whole evening. So I think it's very common, your situation, feeling as though you're in a rut. That is the system of white supremacy. It does a lot to have you in a depressed state or just feeling it de-incentivizes many things that are constructive, because it just can feel like, what's the point? They're not going to promote me anyway. I'm not going to get a raise. I'm not going to advance in my career. I'm just stuck in the same position. Like, that's all by design. In terms of self-care, I think number one, recognizing that, I think for so many people, the internalizing that it is me. There is something wrong with me. I am incompetent. I'm not qualified. Not internalizing, recognizing that this is part of the system of white supremacy racism, to have black people that are super competent and brilliant, to have them not promoted and to treat them as inferiors. Well, you have white people, that was in the segment too, white people that are totally unqualified and incompetent, they will be promoted and get raises and move right on up the career, skyrocket up the company. That is all a part of the design of the system of white supremacy, and that it is not anything unique to your situation. I think that can be helpful too, to keep from internalizing these problems and thinking that it's something that you are doing. I think sticking to self-care in terms of just basics, exercise, eating well. I think if you're seeing already sensing that you are depressed, the same thing that I told the caller about watching for anger, I would definitely watch for sugar. I think when we had Blacko on the program and he talked about depression, I think he said a number of therapists, they will recommend minimizing your sugar intake and alcohol intake. If you are feeling depressed, I would try to eat well, because what you eat does have an impact on you. If you're eating foods that are not nourishing your body, nourishing your spirit, you're just eating nonsense, fast food, junk food, lots of sugary foods, that is not going to help your situation at all. I tend to feel better when I am nourishing my body. You get fruits, vegetables, things that are going to replenish your spirit, and where you actually are being nourished. You're not just eating, you know, junk. You're eating things that are actually nourishing your body so that you can function and mm-hmm. think well. I would try to drink water. I mentioned that before. That is always super helpful. I would try to get out and get exercise, especially if you can do some exercise where you can get outside. I know it's wintertime and it's cold. The sun isn't out as much, and that can kind of drive that kind of state of hibernation and being inside more. I think if you're feeling down, feeling depressed, it can be good to get up and get active, to get out of the house, especially if you can do something constructive where you can move around, burn some calories, get some active energy going. I think that's always great. And I think people tend to feel better about themselves when they're active and feeling good in their body. When you can go out, use your muscles, you sound like you are not an old fogey. So going out, moving around, I think will help with that, get some active energy going. And I'd say try to find another activity outside of work. If it's not, looking for updating your resume and looking for better employment, different plantation. I would find an activity that is constructive, find something that is going to replenish in terms of, for me, that's yoga. I enjoy cooking too, vegan cooking, but finding other activities that you enjoy and doing those. I think sometimes, like I said earlier, de-incentivize. When you get depressed, a lot of times it can steal that energy where we stop doing things that we enjoy, because you just get stuck in that rut about work. That rut extends even beyond work, because you just end up being frustrated and sad about, you know, the work situation, and so you just carry that with you even when you're not at work, and you end up not doing other things with your off time. You just can end up sitting at home and being upset about that. That's why I said try, if you can exercise, get out of the house and do that. If you can find activities where you're getting out of the house and doing something constructive. I think the same thing I told the other caller, certainly system of white supremacy, you don't want to be moving from job to job every other month, every other week, that sort of thing. Racism is going to be there. But I would take it very seriously if it's impacting your mental health to the point of where you're feeling depressed. That is serious. I would at least make an evaluation. Is this a job situation that, you know, I'm supposed to be here like 5 years from now? Am I supposed to be here 2 years from now? Like, I think that can be important to make that sort of assessment, especially if there are some mental health concerns. Might be a signal that there might be a better plantation where racism will still be an issue, but at least I can, you know, have some better opportunities to enhance my career. That might be something to think about as well. And that could be a project too. I'm getting my resume together and looking for other opportunities where I can get out of here. Sometimes that can be helpful as well, where we can start to see that, oh, wait a minute, I don't have to be stuck here. There doesn't have to be a rut. I can, you know, get the hell out of here. If it's something where I'm really feeling like, wow, there's really not going to be an opportunity for me to grow here, enhance my career, enhance my knowledge and skills about my career, mm-hmm. my chosen field. None of those things are viable. I'm not, you know, benefiting at all from being here other than getting, you know, the check that I need to survive. If that's the case, then yeah, I might be looking at, let's get my LinkedIn and resume updated and do some searching that, you know, might get my juices flowing right there. Like, wow, there are possibilities. I had, you know, thought that my world was shrunk just to where I am. There are other possibilities, places I could be. I don't know if any of that makes sense.
Yeah, no, all of it totally makes sense. And I actually, you know, your last suggestion about getting my resume together and kind of looking for other places. And the reason that I have not done that is that, although in this environment, you know, you see these people moving ahead of you, and this may sound kind of stupid, what I'm about to say, I kind of work right now, like, in the government, and there's kind of like a promise of like a pension, and the benefits are very, very, they're excellent, maybe even better than what you might find in some of the private sectors when it comes to benefits and the vacation. So that has kind of been the chain that has kept me from seeking out other opportunities because of the pension and some of the other benefits that are offered. So I guess I kind of feel like I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place because I, you know, could possibly get another position in the private sector, but 9 times out of 10, you know, unless they're paying, you know, let's say six figures or so, which I know they would never pay that for my field, some of the benefits that my municipality offers are, they're just so good, which is why a lot of people, non-white people, kind of find themselves just kind of staying in a position because of the promise or because of the, you know, the pension and the stability. So that's kind of a factor. But I think I probably just need to find other things to do or other passions to invest in outside of work and just, you know, look at it as a, you know, just a means to, you know, make money and, you know, not really to set that expectation of being able to really promote. And one thing you also said is that I internalize it because I started to think, well, maybe it's me, maybe it's something I'm doing, but I hear a lot of other non-white people experiencing the same thing. So it's confirmation, but it's, you know, it's still a depressing system.
Find to be so. Add that for emphasis, highlight, underline. Designed to be depressing for black people. That's why they have all the cigarettes and alcohol advertisements. They know after they've subjected us to generations of terrorism, yes, the niggers will be feeling right bad. Well, here, have a little poison. That'll make you feel better. Kill a few of your brain cells. That'll be great. It certainly, alcohol is not going to help. Sobriety would be best. But yeah, I think if, and that does not sound stupid at all. I think that can be part of self-talk, can be part of the, when we start to internalize. That's not stupid at all. That's intelligent. I mean, that's a huge part of it. I mean, if you are in a situation where you have benefits that you know
are not going to be easily replicated if you move to another job and pension and all that situation. I mean, hey, that's what a whole lot of people struggle to find in a job situation. So absolutely, that's an important factor to weigh. And like I said, hey, if that outweighs, then I would just try to find ways of minimizing, if I could, that anxiety, depression that you're experiencing right now. With, you know, some of the suggestions that I gave, I try to find ways of still refining and enhancing my skills in my field, because you're not, and you wouldn't have that job if you were some idiot. They don't do that for, unless you're classified as white, they don't do that with black people, where you can just go in and make up any sort of nonsense on your credentials. And, you know, I barely made it out of the eighth grade, but I got this here six figure job and got all. They don't do that with black people, in a system of white supremacy. So you're not, ignorant. You are an intelligent person. I'm sure you're sharp in your field. I would try to do things to refine and continue that, because I just said they do so much to de-incentivize us from doing those things, to refine. And yeah, I'm competent. I'm brilliant in whatever my chosen field is, remembering that and then doing things to continue and advance that. They do so much to stall our progress. So I try to find ways to keep my motivation professionally, and then certainly doing things outside of work where you can stay healthy, stay rejuvenated. I'd want to be around people that are replenishing. If you have people that are nerve plucking, that call you names and things, that don't value you, I would probably minimize time with them, maybe permanently, but at least for right now, since this is kind of a tough spot. And just be around people that are going to be helpful and nourishing to you. And like I said, I'd be eating nourishing foods, really minimize the junk food, because that can just really deepen that spiral. If you're eating lots of sugar and bad food, food has such an impact on how we feel. Drinking more water, leaving the sodas alone, alcohol, all that, just trying to do as much as possible to promote nourishment and constructive activity away from work.
Okay. Well. Thank you so much, Gus, for your suggestions, and thank you for the show, because it really serves as a great way for everyone to kind of come in and kind of go over the incidences at work and try to find mechanisms to cope. And also, best wishes for you, and I hope that you find another job very soon. But thank you for what you're doing.
Much obliged. Give us an update. Let us know. Mental health is important. That's, I think, so many black people go through that, being on jobs and ended up in situations where they are not valued, and white people end up. I think retired fighter asked us about that before. Like, what is that for? The bell curve. Why do they keep doing that? Keep pushing out these reports saying that black people are ignorant, black people are stupid, and white people are smarter than everybody else. I said then, part of that, get us to believe that, oh yeah, they're right. I am kind of dumb. We are kind of stupid. We're not that intelligent. Yeah, that's why. To get us to believe, and it happens to all of us. It can happen so easily when you don't get those promotions or this doesn't happen. You start to have that little bit of doubt. Maybe it wasn't racism. They do say that about black people. Yeah, maybe. Hey, I'm just not qualified. That's why I'm not And when it starts happening, repeat it. And then sometimes you'll even have other black people that'll come and say, oh man, you're just blaming white people for everything. Stop blaming white people on all your, you probably showed up late. I know I've had that happen for me. I can't speak for anybody else, but I have had that happen. Sitting around blaming white people for everything. You probably did something, or you did this, and you went in there with fried chicken or anything. It's like, no, I was professional and qualified, and I think they were practicing racism. And that can just exacerbate, because that's why we exist. People have said they try to talk about this and don't have an outlet. That can contribute to the depression as well. Great suggestion about journaling. If you don't have an outlet, being able to write, that can at least be one. You can certainly call into the program or write, and we can read your commentary. But all of that, I think, is important. And at the core, recognizing that it is white supremacy, racism is crucial. I think everything works from there. When you recognize and can remember that's what it is, these things are supposed to be happening. And it's not just me. It's tons. I hope that's at least one thing people get from listening to the Workplace Racism broadcast. much of this stuff ends up sounding familiar. That's why so frequently, regardless of what it is, we end up talking about someone leaving urine in your work area. Somebody else will come and, oh, yeah, they did that to me, too, because they're doing the same thing. It's not anything specific or unique about you and your situation of mistreatment. White people do the same thing all over the world. With that, we'll be here tomorrow for the compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. HBCUs, remember HBCUs. We'll catch up on what happened this past. What a week of Black History Month. So we had the Super Bowl. Donald Trump is not impeached. He had the State of the Union where he wheeled out a Tuskegee Airman. Lots of racial showcasing just in the first week of Black History Month. It's been amazing. Just in the first 7 days. We'll try to catch up tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. With that, much obliged to everyone for participating. Hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. We'll be here in about 24 hours. Sobriety would be best, even when stressed. A lot of anxiety about the work situation. White people's poisons, intoxicants, will not make it better. In addition to being sober, every time we are in a vehicle, driver or passenger, let's be buckled up. Trying to do little things to keep ourselves as safe as we can under dangerous conditions. If you're driving, you are sober, buckled up, and not on the cell phone. Minimize contact with the Amber Geigers, Daniel Holtzclaws of the known universe. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.